Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
What a great week to have Eric Crowe with us, because we had a massive promo from Hangman Page tonight, Eric, standing opposite of Jon Moxley, hyping next week's big title match in Cincinnati, a vital show for Dynamite in that they're on a Tuesday, but trying to retain their viewership by giving away a world title match with two of their major stars who have been around for AEW's whole Dynamite existence. Eric, what did you think of that exchange? What do you think in particular of Hangman's performance? We hear Moxley's auditory brilliance every week. Hangman, not as often.
I mean, it was great. It was a great promo. It was emotional. It played into the character, the anxious millennial
MJF.
Cowboy.
MJF.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I distract from you commenting on that? How ironic.
Yes, and then at least twice they cut away to MJF and the crowd. You know, I think Hangman the second time might have lost his place, and it was supposed to be the go-home part of the promo and finish up. And, you know, it was all MJF, MJF. I don't think they had to do that, especially because they had such a great MJF pre-tape promo where he added more layers and furthered what undoubtedly is a swerve faux face turn, right, that he's doing with the firm. But Hangman Page, I think he channeled Dusty Rhodes for inspiration there, possibly a little bit of Terry Funk. Mm-hmm. I wonder if newly re-signed coach mentor Jon Moxley, his opponent, helped him a little bit with the promo. Wouldn't be any shame in wrestlers helping each other to build a match. It's been going on for decades. But yeah, great with a little asterisk of hey, everything's got to be about MJF always, because he's getting mm-hmm. paid $1 million a year. What did you think?
I thought Hangman really delivered. I don't know if the punching himself thing worked entirely for me, but I'm sort of jury's out. I'm not overly critical of that. I was just sort of like, did that work or did that go a little too far? But it might have worked. But everything else was great. In my report at pwtorch.com, I wrote, this show, Hangman Page, is the most underutilized promo the last 3 years in this business, because he can deliver, and they should be giving him more opportunities to not be anxious and hanging out with Dark Order, but actually getting these fired up promos. And he's done it before, and I think if he had more reps, he would be even better at it. This was really good stuff. This wasn't a showcase promo for Moxley. This was a run-of-the-mill, excellent promo from Moxley. I don't think he had this, you know, set up as a massive centerpiece promo of the year for himself, but, you know, you can't do that every time. This was, he laid the groundwork really well and then stood there and just the body language, the facial expressions, they made this feel like a big match next week, and we didn't work out the MJF chant ahead of time. I know people are just amazed at what a great routine that was when I was chanting MJF, but that was improvised, people.
I was totally distracted by that, by the way. Totally.
Yes. I mean, I get it. I mean, there's a guy with the chip and it's MJF and they want to add another dimension to it. This match could have stood on its own without that. And I think it would have been a better promo. I know, you know, at this point, well, I mean, this is a whole other topic, but at this point, I mean, I wonder if they're leaning so heavily on the chip and MJF, because Hangman's going to win, MJF's going to cash in, and then Moxley's going to go on vacation? Is that supposed to be crossing people's minds at this point, to in a meta sense, an internet social media sense? It'd be weird to debut Renee and then have her disappear for a few weeks on vacation afterwards, but maybe they're hoping people think that, so they tune in to see a title change. Has that crossed your mind, Eric?
No, who says that Moxley's bringing Renee on vacation?
Oh.
Could just be going out with the guys, going fishing or something.
Yeah, maybe.
I think we did, we buried the co-lead here, and that is in the course of Hangman's promo, he said, my old friends, they have disappeared.
Well, that's topic B. You're right. That is, I wouldn't say burying the lead.
Yeah.
But Yeah, yeah. Well, answer my question first, and we'll get to that next.
They're not going to – it's AEW. They're not going to have Jon Moxley lose in his hometown. They have not been building Hangman up.
Yeah.
He's been, like, as the Torch's resident huge Hangman Page fan, even I can acknowledge he's been pretty cold for most of the year. Even when he had the title, right? He had the matches versus Cole, where Cole was coming in cold, losing to Orange Cassidy in a Lights Out match, and then Page was Page beat him decisively in the first match, really leaving not much desire for anyone to see a second match. And yep, but they had a second match on TV, and then Punk steamrollered him at the pay per view before he got hurt. So I would be shocked if they gave the belt to Hangman Page in Moxley's hometown, because then you've got a babyface getting booed. I mean, I guess you're saying MJF would cash in right then and there in Cincinnati and take the belt.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just spitballing. Why else have, either way, you know, if MJF, why make him such a focus of attention for a match that, as this promo showed, can stand on its own? I mean, you can remind people MJF's got the chip. You can show him once, but to show him to the degree with a spotlight on him that it takes away from what Mox and Hangman were doing, I'm second guessing that. But we have to see what happens Tuesday to see if it, you know, sort of retroactively justifies it.
I mean, I think for sure the money match at Full Gear on November 19th, which is I think five more Dynamites away. It's got to be MJF and Moxley, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah,
that's the biggest match they can book. Always go with the biggest match you can book at that particular moment in time, because there's, you know, you could always get somebody else hot. Next pay-per-view will be, you know, Revolution, which will be, you know, 3-4 months away probably. So, yeah, my guess would be they would not shoot their wad like that because they don't have that many cards to play, right, with their depleted top of the roster at the moment. So I would imagine Moxley wins next week and they start the build to MJF.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's go to topic B on this promo, which was the first, correct me if I'm wrong, allusion to the Young Bucks being gone. In a way, it's appropriate for Hangman to bring it up. You know, storyline-wise, I mean, his character would be like, yeah, I mean, part of my journey has been, has included them, and now they're gone. So we can read into that a couple of ways. One, it's sort of like, let's just address the pink elephant in the living room, so to speak, and not look like we're just running from it or hiding from it or never addressing it. But it is the second distraction in this promo, because, I mean, people are like, oh, my God, we're focused on this title match next week. And suddenly we're thinking not only about MJF, but also why is he referencing the Young Bucks? What does that mean? That's right, they're missing. How do we feel about how the crowd responded? My focus left Hangman and Moxley briefly, and that's what my inner dialogue was. And is that hinting at the Bucks coming back next week and costing Hangman the match's heels, or trying to help Hangman win, or who knows what? Like, do you look at that as they've been so good about not mentioning them, that's basically foreshadowing they'll be involved next week, or no, it's more just, let's just kind of address it once so it doesn't seem like we're scared to, but we're going to move on?
I mean, it's hard to say because there's such a lack of solid information about what's going on with this probe of what happened after All Out, as I was sitting in the media scrum and all hell was breaking loose feet away backstage. And, you know, my guess is it was just like a grace note part of the promo, because he quickly went for, I mean, I can't remember which one he did first. I think he talked about the Dark Order, not by name, his friends disappearing, right? He's talking about Colt Cabana, Alan Angels, and Stu Grayson there, right? The Dark Order is, you know, half of what it used to be in terms of sheer numbers. And then, you know, the little thing he's nodding to his old friends, the Elite, again, not by name. So there's that parallel construction there that makes me think probably just a grace note. And then, you know, on my other shoulder is the Devil saying, they generally don't do stuff by accident in AEW. I mean, you know, when they knew they were bringing Punk into the United Center in August of 2021, they started doing little hints every week on TV.
Yeah.
So I guess to me, the thing that I was somewhat surprised about is they're trusting Hangman with a live mic after his comment in May to build that title match versus Punk got under Punk's skin so much that it, you know, blew up the locker room and the promotion for in early December, September. So that was interesting. I also, the other observation I had about Hangman is people like MJF, Jericho, Danielson, Moxley, they're all seasoned live promo people in the ring. So when they get interrupted, they just roll with it. Hangman felt, I mean, it was a really good promo, but maybe his best ever. But he still feels like he's memorized lines and is reading them, as opposed mm-hmm. to Moxley, who seems a little more natural. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that comes with experience. So Hangman had a little bit tougher of a time recovering when he was interrupted needlessly by MJF and his goofy comic-sized chip.
Yeah, and popcorn, anyone? He had all these different, you know, modes. He was like leaning over with the chip and then leaning back with popcorn and then kind of leaning forward and intrigued. And I don't know if any of that – and almost – I don't know. I'm not quite sure how to describe his demeanor. And I feel like he doesn't do anything by accident. So I'm wondering if there's some things that are worth reading into there also. But mostly, I just wish we could be focusing on a world title match, one thing at a time, unless they really do have a big angle plan next week, in which case, I mean, I guess you want to foreshadow and lay the groundwork, whether that's for MJF, the Bucks, or both. I got more follow-up, and obviously there's other parts of the show I want to talk about. We got calls, we got emails to get to. Let's pause here. Let's formally introduce ourselves in the show, and then I'll ask my follow-up question, which I've already forgotten, but it'll come back to me. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-show for Wednesday, October 12th, 2022. I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the print newsletter since the late 1980s, the website since the late 1990s, and podcasting now for 20 years. And it's great that you joined us today. We appreciate that. We're here live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. And we always have co-hosts. And the other voice you hear on the show today is a former Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, circa 1990, we go way back, and a frequent co-host on various podcasts here at The Torch, and he's written some guest columns recently. Eric Kroll, longtime journalist and longtime follower of pro wrestling. Great to have your voice back on this show, for in particular this show, with Hangman, a prominent part of it. Eric, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me back. I looked up on the Skype calls. This is the third time in 6 weeks. If I were an AEW wrestler, I'd have a busy schedule, indeed.
Yes. I'm going to encourage everybody to call. We got so much more to talk about. Orange Cassidy winning a title after his 68th win in AEW was for a title. I didn't see that coming. I think that's pretty cool. We'll get your thoughts on that. The former Renee Paquette, debuting as an on-air interviewer. I was scared for Alex Marvez, but he showed up too, so it wasn't like Renee cost Alex his job.
Darn it, Wade, you beat me to that joke. Darn it.
Did I?
Yes.
You got to send me notes. Like, I got these jokes planned. Don't step on them. For Alex Marvez fans, I mean, for the Alex Marvez fan, there's some relief there. And, lots to talk about on the show. So we invite you to join us on the show if you're live streaming us at WadeKellerPostShow.com. You can also find a direct link to the stream on PWTorch.com at the top and bottom of my TV report. So Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, check out my TV reports as the show airs. I report what happens and also my thoughts on the segments and matches. And at the top and bottom is a link to the live stream along with our phone number and email as a handy reminder. You can also find that same information on our Twitter account near the ending of the shows every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at PW Torch. So if you're on Twitter and you haven't followed us, follow us at PW Torch. You can call us and email us. The phone number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. We will have a segment with Javier Machado coming up in a little bit later on the show. But we have our callers lining up from all over the country, including Michigan, actually all over the continent, Michigan, Newfoundland, Canada, Illinois, and St. Louis, Missouri, and more. So join them in line 347-215-8558. Eric, I forgot what my follow-up was going to be before I went into the introducing the show, and I'm kicking myself
Did
for it.
Did it have to do with MJF's pre-tape promo?
No, but it probably had to do with MJF. So let's actually cover that either way. What do you make of what's going on with MJF right now? The angle last week with either Yuta, Lee Moriarty, Stokely Hathaway, The Firm. My take on this is MJF's character is a mess. There's just too much going on too often without a chance to breathe, without just a stretch of a couple months where I know how I'm supposed to feel about him. Doesn't matter, you know, fans can feel however they want. You know, you can rebel against the storyline or like someone you're supposed to not like, all that. But I don't have any sense with MJF or AEW that even they have a clear idea of what they want to do with him over the last couple months. I feel like this is not a master plan that we're seeing play out. It feels like a little made up as they go along, adjusting to crowd responses, injuries, whatever, different situations, I don't know if it's true, but different situations going on. And I just want some stability instead of constantly wondering if we're being swerved or if we're supposed to not like him or like him, if he's going for cheers or not. I just sort of want him to get in a landing place and be there. Where are you on this? I mean, he's interesting to watch no matter what. I just am sort of, you know, channeling Cowboy here, or Hangman, excuse me, channeling Hangman. I just want some stability with how I feel about MJF. I want a consistent presentation for, you know, 6 to 8 weeks to stabilize things.
Well, the problem right now with MJF is that after he no-showed the meet and greet before Double or Nothing, then he did his match, was stretchered out in a minute or whatever, 2 minutes as punishment, I don't know, and then they still let him come on TV even though he should have been selling that injury, the Powerbomb Symphony from Wardlow in L.A. They wanted they had the Time Warner Discovery execs in the house. They wanted, you know, to show off. Tony Khan wanted to pop a big rating. So they let him cut that promo that turned himself babyface, calling Tony Khan an effing mark. And so he's gone for 3 months, 90 days. Was he suspended? I don't know. Probably we will never know. Because they sure as heck could have used him this summer with all the injuries. And so he comes back and he is treated like a babyface because in Chicago at All Out, you know, fans pop for news, right? MJF returning, huge news. He gets cheered. And then I think within the next week or two, they were in New York where he's going to be treated like a babyface because he's from there, right, from Long Island. And so he has had to resort in the face of all of these babyface cheers, he's had to resort to cheap heat, right? Like insulting the local sports team, the stuff that always works, but you know, is kind of groan worthy. And so he's been a mess, and it's self-inflicted, I would argue, for the most part, because of the choices they made back in late May and early June and in September for his return. So what is going on now? I mean, I'm afraid going to have to see how it plays out, right? It doesn't make obvious sense to me right now at the moment if the big money match is babyface Moxley versus heel MJF at Full Gear for the title. And if, let's say, MJF wins, maybe? I don't know. It doesn't really make sense for MJF to be, you know, on a six-week face turn here, right? So what is going on? So everything so far with MJF has been a slow burn, long build, right? The Punk thing, I think it was like 10 weeks between the time that they met, that they did the pre-Thanksgiving promo in Chicago to 10 weeks later in early February, they did the match with MJF that went like 35 minutes or whatever, right? So it all takes long. His stories develop. We saw that with Jericho. So that's his history in the promotion. It was a great promo because it focused him on the title, and it added a layer to his character, and that layer was self-loathing, right? I mean, that was an incredible line. You hate me, I look in the mirror, I hate me. So that was, that was quite compelling. It certainly seemed to be putting more breadcrumbs to a babyface turn, but gosh, why? I guess I don't understand it yet, and why the fans want to cheer this guy, because the fans always want to cheer cool heels in modern wrestling. And why provide more breadcrumbs and hints and clues for them to do it? I don't know. What do you think he's just a mess?
I think MJF needs like 3 or 4 hobbies to keep himself busy so he doesn't overthink his promos every week. I feel like he just like he wants there to be so much going on, the density of trying to either correct course or add layers or add teases. And I think he's so talented at being more straightforward. If one of his idols is Roddy Piper, Roddy Piper was who Roddy Piper was for years and years and years and years, week after week. And we tuned in to see that brand, that character do his thing. And I just don't know if I need a therapy session with MJF about punching mirrors and hating himself and all that. It's not like bad what he's doing. It's just not what I want. And like out of MJF, because I want him to be the modern day combination of all the people he idolizes and has, you know, grown up watching and studied and just be consistently that person. And if the fans are reacting the wrong way, you know, you can adjust, but adjust with the idea being it might take a little while, but we'll get there. As opposed to, you know, yelling into the mic and doing swerves and trying to overcome. I don't know. I'm just kind of bummed out. I think before all the stuff happened with, I hate Tony Khan because he's not offering me an early raise on my contract and everything that happened since then, a lot of that you just laid out, I feel like we've lost what would have been a great year of just MJF being MJF for all of 2022. And this feels like more of it. And I feel like there's just this scramble to correct course or add these complicated layers to think through. And it's like, I just want MJF to be in a feud with someone and cut promos on them and have that person talking about what a scumbag he is or vice versa. If he's going to go babyface, just do it. So I don't know. I mean, I'm curious what people think. Feel free to email or call because maybe I'm in the minority. Maybe people really, really like this sort of guessing game and trying to read into what's a swerve and what's sincere and what's BS and what's true introspection. I don't know if it's not that I don't want to think that hard watching wrestling, but I just don't. I feel like it's every week it's a new set of strategies and it's just a little too much. So that's kind of, I don't know. That's kind of my feeling on his character right now. I'm less interested because I at the core, I don't know that there's a high enough percentage of who he really is or who he's going to end up being these days. A lot of it just feels like a journey to try to figure things out or a bunch of swerves, either in both of which I'm just kind of exhausted from.
Well, yeah, I mean they are fighting it a little bit with him. They made their own bed and they're lying in it. And
Eric, this is a good chance to explain. Lying in bed means you're flat and you're relaxing. Laying in bed means you're having sex.
I put this on an Associated Press style book quiz for my college students every year, and I'm not teaching this semester, so I have to look it up the right answer every time. I never
Oh, really?
I rely on the style book. Yeah, I can never get it straight. Thank God for the internet. How might this play out? Assuming that MJF and Moxley at Full Gear is the match, how might this play out? My guess would be the temptation of MJF to turn face to be better is a swerve faux babyface angle that will potentially it can pay off one of two ways at Full Gear. So you may remember that when I think it was Moxley's first defense against. One of his title defenses after winning the belt was against MJF, correct? I think. Moxley and MJF have faced off on pay-per-view, and it was Moxley's won, right? I think he wasn't supposed to use the DDT that he uses as his finisher, and the ref's back was turned, and Moxley used the DDT to beat MJF before MJF could hit him with the ring. I think that was the finish to a pay-per-view. It might have even been... I don't know which one. Lost at the Sands at time, but certainly within the last 3 years. So they could play off of that, right? Does this time MJF go to hit him with the ring and win? Does this time MJF struggling to be good, so he pulls up, pulls back, and doesn't hit him with the ring, and Moxley beats him? And then they maybe set up a rematch for Revolution in February or March? I don't know. The problem is, because of MJF, you know, who MJF is and the penchant for cheering cool heels and turning the babyface, if he wants to do a slow burn of several months on this, I don't think the fans are going to let him.
Yeah, I that remains to be seen, but I think they're more in control of crowd reaction and less helpless than sometimes I think the approach that they're taking suggests they feel, if that makes sense. I don't think you have to give in to fans cheering MJF based on whatever went on, you know, this summer and into fall. I just think you just tell your story and plow through. MJF's a great heel. They've got great baby faces. The fans will line up if they just tell a good story. And I don't think trying to play the fans for fools or doing swerves, and we'll get into the Daniel Garcia thing, that either feel predictable or out of nowhere. They're just, you know, too many swerves, too many turns. Just whatever MJF wants to be for the next year, just, or, you know, whatever stretch of time, just do that and be good at it, and things will line up. You know, if you have the right baby faces and he wants to be a heel, the crowd will boo him. And if they don't, you know, so be it. But just at least tell a story that is consistent and I think just easier to comprehend. But anyway, I want to, like I said, I want to hear from our callers and emailers about that. Speaking of calls, we got a lot of people lined up. So let's get rolling with our phone calls. We'll start with Chris in Mount Pearl, Newfoundland. Chris, welcome. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about Dynamite?
Gentlemen, good evening. I got questions, lots of them. Why did Pac and Orange Cassidy main event this show with a made up title when neither of them is the hometown person or even home country person, because apparently Canada is a town now, when you could have had the world title match for the 58-42 mention from last show, Ring of Honor, instead of AEW? Like, I don't understand that booking, especially when you knew Jericho was going to get cheered. It just felt so weird to me. Like, any insight into why they would main event with the All Atlantic title match in a city that's nowhere near the Atlantic?
I wondered that as well. And the best I came up with was, I think in recent weeks, I don't know how long this goes on, they seem to fall off in quarter seven and quarter eight, which would be what, 9:30 to 10:00. They need something really strong in
if
there.
If you're on the East Coast.
Yeah, if you're on the East Coast.
The Midwest, Eric. Represent the Midwest.
Well, there is East Coast bias in media. So my guess is they wanted the most amount of people to see Danielson and Jericho. So that's why they put it in the 8:00 hour, 9:00 hour if you're on the East Coast. And then the other reason they probably did it is they knew they were doing a title change for the All-Atlantic title, if I'm getting that right, some belt they were fighting over. And so fans pop for news like title changes. And Pac has two belts already and limited AEW dates. So they wanted to give the fans in Toronto, they want to send them home happy. And what better way to do that than to have Orange Cassidy win his first belt in AEW? That's the best explanation I can give. Wade, do you have any other thoughts on that?
No. I mean, I think you covered a lot of the bases. I think Tony probably wanted to have history made in Toronto. You know, and the two belt thing with Pac makes sense. I like it. I think Orange Cassidy, just as a sort of a side note to your question, Chris, I like the title change, just generically speaking, because I think Orange Cassidy always comes through in big matches. It's an unexpected title change, I think, for most viewers, so it puts over the idea that you can't always predict when a title will change hands. They could have, and I would say should have, or would have benefited from doing more to hype the match in an hour and a half leading up to it, hour and a half plus leading up to it. I was left wondering at times, what is the main event? What's coming up later? Is there a promo? Is it a match?
Yep.
And I just don't think you should be wondering what that is. I talked about the match on a podcast yesterday with Jason Powell. It's not like I didn't know what the match was. This plays into my case that a lot of people have a lot going on in their lives. A lot of people are thinking about a lot of things other than AEW. And Tony Khan, I think, thinks a lot about AEW. and caters to the fans who have memorized everything and know. And I think there's a benefit not only to reminding people, but also adding to it as they did with the video package, the excellent video package with Chris Jericho and Bryan Danielson leading up to their title match. I would have done something more. And did I miss anything? I mean, it's possible in doing my report, I rewound and fast-forwarded too far or something. Was there any kind of mention, Eric, that you remember of this match that stood out to help hype it?
I do not recall. There was a I think during the ROH title match, they did a what's coming up, the women's tag match, and the last one still to come. So you, by process of elimination, you figured they probably weren't main eventing with the ladies tag match,
So I think if you have a title match and you're doing a title change and it's the main event of your program, or at least the final match of your program, however you want to look at that term, main event, I would have done more. I would have done more to have a promo with Pac and a promo with Cassidy. It doesn't have to be a big deal. More than, like you said, a graphic and a passing mention by the announcers and then a plug right beforehand. I'm not super hung up on a TV show on match order having to be the biggest match last, as long as it's a big match. And now we can argue, is an AEW All Atlantic title bigger than an ROH world title match? It's a largely dormant company. They have pay-per-views, but whatever. I guess I just don't feel all that strongly about the title match order on this show, Chris, but I'll throw it back to you for any response to anything we said.
No, that's fair, and I liked the title change, don't get me wrong, and I'm glad that the Orange Cassidy finally won something, because he's been seeming a little stagnant. It felt weird. You mentioned a couple of things I wanted to pick up on there. They definitely made history, mainly because the tickets for this show were twice as much as the WWE SmackDown that I went to, I want to say, 3 or 4 years ago now. In an arena that holds approximately a quarter of the people. So history's already made there. We also had history made by Jericho throwing what I will categorically call the worst 10-spot punches in the history of professional wrestling I have ever seen. They made Britt Baker's super kicks look stiff. Like, that was awful in the corner. I was the runner at the end of it was great, but the punches were just awful. So, like, the history was made. I just want to follow up, though, on the Ring of Honor thing. This brings me to something I heard on the flagship this week with Jason. By the way, if you're not listening to the flagships, listen to them. You really are missing out. You mentioned, Wade, half jokingly, that maybe Tony is setting up to change the name of the company and to just go with the Ring of Honor brand. You mentioned because he's leasing the All Elite name. Maybe that's not the case, but maybe he's doing it as a power play. I don't know. Like, I hadn't thought of it, but when you mentioned it and then said you're half kidding, I'm like, are you though? Like, that doesn't sound so far-fetched to me. Do you think that's just completely off the table?
Yeah, just for context for people in the flagship, I brought that up as it's been befuddling enough to me how much Ring of Honor has been a presence, and the explanations for it don't seem to me to justify the amount of attention that brand has been getting since the purchase, that it crossed my mind, what if Tony's goal is to eventually change the name to ROH, in part because he wants to drop the Elite, because that's so associated with the Bucks, and I did not report he's leasing the name. I don't know either way, but but it crossed my mind, what if that's something he doesn't have rights to? What if that's something he just wants to change because ROH has more of a history? But I did follow it up by saying, I think there's just the tiniest of tiny chances that that's even true. I'm not in any way saying I think that's a serious option. My point was, you have to go to some kind of crazy, outlandish, wild theory in order to, like, come up with some sort of justification for how much ROH has become the dominant brand that's mentioned on TV some weeks. It got mentioned more last week. David Bryant tallied these up and sent them to me. ROH was mentioned quite a few more times last week than AEW was.
Yeah,
and
58-42.
So thank you, yes. So, Chris, I want to be clear for people who only hear this show and not the other one. I don't want anyone to report because aggregators can oftentimes not include my context, my tone, and all that. Yeah, well, hopefully they listen to me saying this. I'm in no way thinking that that's going to happen. I really was more – it was illustrative of the fact that I am trying to come up with wild theories to think of how they would justify it. But anyway, go ahead.
I'm going to do my best Todd Martin impression here. Wade. Come on now. How was that? I guess
that's
not
solid. That's solid.
Wait, you
yeah.
think I'm downplaying? You think I'm downplaying it too much?
I think
or
you're
it's
being
just
ridiculous? I think you. I heard that, and I was rolling. I was rolling my eyes when I heard it, and I'm like, this is some cockamamie. Now, I think I've listened to you long enough and read you long enough to know when you are trying to hint at to people that something is real, and you just can't say it because of, you know, something
right.
else. Or whatever.
And that was not
this.
It.
Was not that. This
right.
was sports radio fantasy babble. I'm sorry. Tony Khan is not such a dummy, and his father is not such a dummy, and his people are not such dummies that they gave up the intellectual property All Elite Wrestling when they founded the company, right? They didn't even give the Elite an ownership stake, as far as we know, right? So,
Eric, in at risk of being defensive, in defense of me, I framed it as ridiculous. My point was you have to come up with it, – it's like I stipulated the ridiculousness of it because you have to come up with a ridiculous theory, or I was thinking of ridiculous theories that would justify how much TV time is being spent on the ROH brand. So it was a point that I framed, I would say, properly, not as sports radio babble, to illustrate a point that you have to go that far to justify how much attention the brand is getting. It was meant to make – the case that it's ridiculous ROH gets as much attention as it does because none of the other theories help explain it. If you read it differently, fair enough, but in my defense, the way you're framing it is not how I approached it, and I don't think it's actually how I presented it.
I know, but you have to be responsible in the year 2022 because of the very aggregators you talked about. I don't know. I thought you could have telegraphed. If that was the case, I think a little more telegraphing might have been in order. I disagree with your fundamental point. I don't think this is that hard to figure out. Tony Khan is trying to get a TV deal for Ring of Honor. He bought the company, closed on it, in March? He has asked about this in almost literally every interview. When's the ROH TV deal coming? When is it coming? And he's an impatient person, I imagine. He's frustrated because there's a merger in which the Discovery folks are really busy doing an epic bloodbath of cutting billions of dollars in costs from that merged company. And so I'm sure giving this guy an hour of TV on some network that they have, and they have a ton of networks they could do it, is not at the top of their mind, but clearly it remains at the top of Tony Khan's mind. So why did he put the ROH belt on Chris Jericho? Well, Jericho is usually in high-rated Dynamite segments, so he can point to that with the Discovery brass. Look, we've got this on Chris Jericho. He's a huge star. He was in WWE. He can carry a TV brand. And with Danielson not winning tonight, I think, and Garcia turning, I think we're probably in line for a longer Jericho title run than maybe I thought at the start. But I don't think it's that complicated of why ROH is
no. But I understand that's the obvious point to make. Or that the obvious theory and the most likely result. My point is that it doesn't, to me, justify the amount of time it's getting, and that the justification for the amount of TV time it's getting has to be something that is ridiculous and unlikely to happen. And I stand by my framing of it, and I apologize that you misinterpreted it as something that could get aggregated as news. But my point was it's too much if the explanation Tony always gives is the actual reason. Because it's too much ROH. That was my case coming out of last week's show. Ran a poll on Twitter, 1,000 responses, way more people negative on ROH getting mentioned as often as it is than okay with it. And so it's not just me making that point. It's a pretty large sample size of people responding in an unscientific poll going, too much ROH. We showed up to watch AEW, not ROH. So my point went over your head, or just an awful way of delivering it. People can choose. But it was to point out the only way to justify this much would be if he had to give up the AEW name. And I might have delivered it a little too dryly for you. Chris, you'd stir trouble. I want to throw back to you. You can change the subject and follow up.
Sorry. All right, let's move on to a less controversial topic, hopefully. AEW has a ridiculous amount of talent sitting at home twiddling its thumbs. And for some reason, they need to put a tag team together, so they take two current champions, throw them together, feed them to people who haven't been on TV in recent memory, and then wrangle it into some weird three-way feud with another ROH group, and then they bring out FTR, who still haven't wrestled on Dynamite, and then This is probably the only time I'm going to get you to agree with the statement, poor Sean Spears. Like, what on earth was that entire segment, and why does it exist?
Sometimes, Eric, they can book a little too much to the home crowd or home country. Was this a case of that? And by the way, I make fun of Sean Spears and the whole flicking his 10 fingers in NXT and act and being so just self-satisfied that that's the greatest thing ever. And the chairman thing was dumb. So part of me celebrating this segment is that he wasn't called the chairman. He didn't bring chairs out. So the absence of that ridiculousness or that stupidity makes me happy. But I also do think there's more to Sean Spears than that cornball, like that look on his face that I say always looks like he just like told a fart joke and thinks it's the funniest thing ever. Like, I think there's more to him than that. Maybe not a ton more, but more. And I think he should be more consistently utilized, but with a better gimmick than flicking 10 fingers like it's the be-all, end-all, or being the chairman because puns are awesome. I think he can be more than that. And so I am hopeful. Don't misinterpret me, Eric. I'm not saying he should have a main event push, but I am more hopeful that he gets a bigger push with a better character, and that this trip to Canada sparked that.
Before you chime in there, just a second. Wade, you did notice that he's flicking 10 fingers again, right? And that perfect 10 was on the Tron.
It was a bunch of like sly, like, hey, look what we can do to, you know, do callbacks, which is groan inducing. But obviously they're not going to go with that as like the ongoing thing. Well, I shouldn't say obviously. I wouldn't put anything past Sean Spears. No, I'm on.
Sorry, I just had to make sure anyway, you saw that.
Yes. FTR started it.
I cannot wait for the aggregator tomorrow to post. They probably already wrote it. It's waiting in the queue to get posted. Keller, : Sean Spears deserves bigger push in AEW. I cannot wait for that. My notes on Sean Spears were, wow, the crowd popped for Sean Spears. This is easy heat. This is an easy crowd. I mean, the crowd was one of the best parts of the show tonight, and I get, you know, is Spears Canadian? I'm sorry. Yes?
He's
from Canada.
He
announced him as being somewhere in the Toronto area, I think, the GTA. To answer your question, why was this segment overbooked? And it is a very valid question. My only answer would be Rampage matches aren't going to book themselves, right? They got to put something in that hour at 9 o'clock on Friday that doesn't even do 500,000 viewers anymore because it's kind of in a dead time slot and they just don't have the star power to carry that third hour and make you watch even when they're live like last week.
Eric, what is your thought on Sean Spears' potential, his upside, how he should be utilized? And what do you think of the chairman giving?
I mean, I think the highest, best use for Sean Spears.
Sorry, time's up. We can't talk Sean Spears anymore. We've hit our limit. No, I'm kidding. There should be one. We've passed it. Go ahead, Eric.
I think he had his peak when he was shooting with Cody before Dynamite was even on the air, right?
Yes.
That was
what made me think there's more to him. Him and Tully, I thought, you know, it's like, hey, they're going to get something more out of him. And that's kind of – sorry to interrupt you twice, once for a joke and once for this. But that is the example of what I think he can be more valuable. He could be a challenger to Orange Cassidy for the All-Atlantic title as a heel, for instance.
Right, yeah. Put it, you know, gatekeeper – I don't even know if I'd go mid-card. But, like, you know, he was fine in his role against Wardlow because he was a gatekeeper before he could get to MJF, right? I think that was the – that was the feud. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, the perfect use of him. And if you wanted to put him on one of the 16 dark shows, you could have him work matches with younger wrestlers who need to learn, right? They're learning on the job. They don't get enough matches. Put him in with what did Cody call him that caused him to bust him in the head? A good hand like Sean Spears and get people some reps that way. That's perfectly fine. If you're paying the guy, why not?
Chris, back to you.
Put him with Ethan Page. That's what I think. That's a combo waiting to happen. They seem like they would work well together. I mean, yes, they're Canadian and it's the easy match, but I don't know. That feels right to me. That is the bulk of what I had. I actually, for a moment, was excited that the women were going to main event because it was getting close, and I completely forgot about that All Atlantic title match, and then it happened. But
yeah,
I don't know, the whole episode just kind of felt there for me. I almost went to this show. For those who don't know Canadian geography, Toronto is a 3.5-hour flight for me, but it's the closest I'm going to get. It's
wow.
even easier to get to than, say, Boston, which is technically a little closer. But when I looked into it, tickets for the show were going to be more expensive for me to go tonight and tomorrow night would have been more expensive than the flight itself. So there's just no way I could have managed it. And
yeah.
at the time, Punk was still there. So Punk is one of the few people I've never seen live. Jericho would be the other reason to go. And they didn't even play Judas. So I can't say I sat at home and regretted missing the show, which is quite an indictment on a company that I was so excited to see started. I'll leave you to chew on that point. And thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Chris.
Great evening, gents.
The crowd went into business
yeah.
for itself, and they sang
yeah.
Judas.
What was up with that? I mean,
they got denied their moments, right? They got.
Oh no, I get that. Why didn't they play Judas?
Because he said he was coming out as the Lionheart to, you know, wrestle that gimmick.
Yeah, well, you can come out to like play White Zombie after the match, but get that, or play Judas, and then I don't know. You got to give the fans of Canada a chance to sing Judas. That was awesome that they just decided they were going to sing it regardless of given the official chance.
Yes, a really fun crowd that added to the show. I like the show. I thought tonight was a pretty good Dynamite. And
agree.
And if they would have had the crowd from DC, the crowd who ventured to DC last week, they, you know, it might not have been, you know, I may not be speaking in such glowing terms.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. All right. Let's keep rolling through calls. We'll go next to Larry in Beardstown, Illinois. Larry, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to address something that was mentioned there with the previous caller about the crowd. As a fan, you know, I've been watching since, you know, the early 80s, you know, with Strangler Lewis and George Hackenschmidt and all those guys. But seriously, you know, watching over these years, it came to my mind, and it came to my mind tonight, that a crowd, when it really wants to and it wants to be there and it wants to watch a wrestling show, it can make a show a lot better. The crowd was eating up almost everything with a spoon last night. The place came unhinged for FTR and Orange Cassidy winning the belt. As a fan, it was just like, you know what? They're not sitting there. They're not sitting there on their hands. They're not picking every single thing apart. They're enjoying the show. They're having fun, and you know, it makes the experience more fun for, as far as I'm concerned, for a fan at home watching this, thinking, "Yeah, this crowd's not into this." You know, you think that you're not going to want to watch it, but you know, you might see this, and hey, I'm going to tell a couple of my friends that I watched this show, and it didn't suck, and the crowd was into it, and you know, that sort of thing.
Larry, two things you said are interesting. One, AEW is like whatever sports analogy you want to use, the six-man award. What do they say in hockey? When you have a home ice advantage from the crowd, Eric. Is it the 13? What is it? What do they say?
I don't think it has a...
I think it does. It does, but it's not the 13th man type thing. It's like something else. Anyway, my point is sometimes a crowd absolutely elevates the experience. And AEW had that over NXT on Wednesdays in their head-to-head battle because they were running these big arenas and they had these just wildly enthusiastic fans that even without context to some of the characters who were on the show were so over that you just felt like, well, this is the show to watch, and it hurt NXT because they were running the PC until the pandemic, and then you know, both of them had, you know, the advantage went away somewhat, although they still had a better venue at Daly's Place, AEW did. That's something huge. And when it's not there, and AEW is going through a span now where they're going back to cities multiple times, or in the case of Chicago, the thousandth time, you're going to have some diminishing returns. That novelty of seeing AEW in person isn't there. So a night like this reminds us what it's like when they hit a market for the first time and it's a good wrestling market. I don't think this crowd is like as wildly into the product as some of those early AEW shows were, but it was better than – it was close. And it was better than what we've seen lately in some of the return visits to U.S. cities. The other thing you said is the crowd isn't like, you know, picking the show apart. And it's really interesting because when you have an enthusiastic crowd, and AEW had that, you know, in their whole run pre-pandemic and then also post-pandemic with all the pent-up energy, it can actually mask some deficiencies. And so you might think it's good to have a crowd that doesn't pick apart the show, but it can also give you a false sense of doing things the right way. And it can make you complacent about the detail work. And so I think what AEW is facing in some of these other cities is, yeah, the honeymoon's over. We need X, Y, and Z to be better if you want us to react like we did the first time. And that the crowds that are a little more hardened or less just like, oh, we're so happy you're here, we'll cheer for anything, is actually, I think, a more realistic version of the audience that AEW is chasing on the TV and pay-per-view front. And so as good as this crowd is tonight, I don't know that you want an easy crowd every single week. I think you do want to have to earn the cheers for good booking, good promoting, good character development. So that just kind of jumped out to me a little bit when you talked about you know, a crowd maybe not picking it apart. Sometimes it can actually work against you in the long run. Go ahead, Eric.
I'll jump in here. Yeah. Well, Larry, if you want to hear AEW picked apart, I highly recommend you listen to the flagship with Wade and Jason Bowell yesterday, because they did a lot of picking apart, and some of it was justified in some of it was less justified, but it's a good listen. I haven't finished it yet. I just got through the AEW part. I think it helps. Obviously, the first time in the city helps. Toronto, a big wrestling city historically. What also helps is someone who has sat through many an AEW taping in Chicago, because they're always here. No Rampage afterward really helps. They did, I think they taped about an hour before they went live. They taped about an hour of Dark, one of the Dark shows, and they went through seven matches, and they go in and out, but before the Punk show, sometimes before Rampage, they're taping 2 hours of Dark, and that's a slog, man. You're beat by the time it comes out just from sitting there watching all this stuff, so that helps. I think Wade hit on a really good point about the numbers, the returning to cities and the diminishing returns they're doing. I mean, AEW has some real danger this fall and heading into early winter. I looked into this a little bit. I'm looking at a WrestleNomics spreadsheet from the October 2nd show based on WrestleTix data. But I'm looking at the
follow them all on Patreon. They do good work.
Yeah. I'm looking at the numbers. They're 2 weeks old now in most cases. But, I mean, in Washington, they did 3,207, and they did about 1,000 less for Rampage last week, the second show in the market. Cincinnati, they did 6,800 when they've been there before on average. I think they've got about 3,500 tickets sold maybe. So, I mean, that's about half, right? That's not great. It's true in city after city. Baltimore, 4,535 on average, and they were at 1,604. And Boston, 5,647. Now they're at 2,344. And Bridgeport, Connecticut also is, you know, almost 6,000 to 1,700. So AEW does move tickets at the last minute. I don't think as much as WWE does when they WWE add something to the show, like we saw with the DX reunion, move some tickets, and probably Roman Reigns and the Bloodline being in New York for Raw, move some tickets at the last minute so they had a good crowd. AEW's ticket buyers tend to buy in the first day, right? They're rabid fans who want to make sure they don't get shut out, and they probably had experiences getting shut out before. And so that's, to me, that's, you know, the TV contract will be what it will be, and it'll be talked about for until they get one or don't. With Discovery, and to me, this is a sign that losing all of these key players, the Bucks, Kenny Omega, CM Punk, Adam Cole, they know they're not going to, as of right now, they know these folks are not going to be on the show, and at a certain point, you come back to a city 2, 3, 4 times, and you don't have your key players, people are just going to stay home, right? This is where you see, you know, the cold AEW is cold. I don't really think that's borne out by the ratings that much. They're not down that much. But
They're down 10% from a year ago, same 10-week stretch.
Yeah, I think one of the things that your TV analysis doesn't take into account, I don't know the proper mathematical way to do this, but so many people cut the cord every year that there's just fewer cable homes. I don't know. are they made up by people who sign up for Sling or a streaming service?
They're all counted in cable. If something airs on TNT, it's counted, whether it's Sling or traditional cable to your home.
But there are fewer cable homes year after year. So if you're down, you're not, you know, the universe of homes is also down. Now, obviously, you weren't playing in every home that cut the cord. So I don't know how you factor in if cord cutting is high single digits each year, you know, how many of those people are watching AEW as a proportion. But that does factor into some of it. But I definitely think decreased, you know, not wanting to go out and see the product live, which is that next step, that is not a good sign. Atlantic City, November 4th show, just a few weeks away, 5,800 last time, only 1,000 so far as of 2 weeks ago. So this is looking kind of dire.
Yeah, the numbers pretty consistently show that whatever AEW had going early, that anything that they had going because of the honeymoon period, we're now starting to see, and COVID threw, you know, kind of a wrench into a traditional way of analyzing it, but we're seeing that the effects of the honeymoon period wearing off. There's a lot of stats that can be looked at. And hey, drawing a million plus people basically 10 straight weeks, because they barely were under it for the week during hurricane coverage. That's good in today's cable market. So if you're AEW, regardless of how you factor in reduced cable and all that, when they're number one on the demo and you're drawing more than a million people, and you're, quote, only 10% off, I mean, there's a lot of positives to that when it comes to your value to major cable stations when it comes to negotiating. But, you know, live attendance and, you know, even, I mean, it's, but again, you hate to compare the pay-per-view number year over year for All Out because, you know, it's just Punk and Danielson and Cole were so new that certainly added a lot to it also. It's one thing to splash in the water of analysis is last week we asked, you know, how do you grade WWE this year compared to AEW in terms of the overall direction of the company, booking, show quality, business progress, and tangibles. 45% gave AEW either an A or a B, and 74% gave WWE an A or a B. I think AEW is a company that needs to be nitpicked more and criticized more by more people, because I think there's a lot of enablers or people who are super served by what matters to them who are ignoring things that AEW does poorly that matter to other people who aren't watching. And my job is to separate myself from, I mean, I'll add what I, you know, obviously I talk about what I like and what I care about, but contextually, you want to take into account what is WWE doing well that doesn't matter to me, that AEW is not doing well that doesn't matter to me, and that kind of thing. And that poll result, however you want to react to an unscientific Twitter poll of PW Torch followers, that's not good. 26% gave WWE an A, 10% gave AEW an A. 2.5 times more people gave an A grade to WWE so far this year than AEW. That is reflected in some of the stats you just cited, Eric, and the viewership numbers. And as far as the cable households go, the rating number, which is a percentage of homes with cable watching, is also down, you know, sharply. So, you know, there's no way to spin the numbers as a positive other than they were in a honeymoon period with Punk, Danielson, and Cole last year, and they don't have this year. Plus, they're missing Cody, Aleister Black, Miro, on and on. You know, a lot of people have dropped off.
Yeah, and I think there's a Vince is gone honeymoon bump in WWE right now, and I'm happy for their long-suffering fans that they get this respite. And if Triple H can approach even half to three-quarters of the success he had making me love NXT, those takeovers, you know, they'll have years of fun ahead of them. So I'm happy for them.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Cool. I was going to say something else, but I don't know. Larry, back to you.
Some interesting attendance numbers. I had no idea that the pre-sales had dropped off as considerably as they had. That's some pretty good information. At this point, do you think AEW would be more worried about that, or would they be more worried about increased drop in ratings, particularly for Dynamite. I'm just gonna hang up, let you talk over about it, because I know you've got some other calls coming in. I'll just listen to hear what you think, and so long from the land of Lincoln.
Thank you, Larry. All those numbers are important, Eric, but what do you think is more important?
Oh, the TV deal, the new TV deal, is the whole ball game here. I mean, I would argue that a lot of the criticisms you have about AEW, we want more video packages, you want them to show the concourse, you want a new set. Those are things you
and they're all equally important, by the way. So be sure to treat them that way when you analyze my analysis.
They sure took up a lot of time yesterday. But anyway, all of that, I think a lot of the things that ail AEW from a critic's perspective, somebody who's paid to think, to analyze this stuff, all of it would be potentially, it's all solved. Tony Khan can just finally take a breath and he gets a TV deal that pays him. I know he's going to want a significant increase. Just reading the trade publications, the Hollywood Reporter and all that, and just seeing these headlines about how much they're cutting and everything they're cutting there at Discovery, it's hard to imagine they're going to get – I don't want to throw out – if they got twice what they're getting now, it would be a loss for probably considering what they deserve, but they might be lucky to get that, right? They may – the appeal may be, hey, we don't have to pay that much for this show or these 3 hours of TV, and they can provide promotion for all of our other shows, all these other cheaply made shows on all the Discovery networks. But that's the whole ballgame. If you are not focused singularly on, oh my God, we can't let people click away, right? We got to have all picture, double split screen breaks. We can't waste time on video packages because people will click away and then our rating will fall and we'll be below a million. If you had that financial security of knowing you had a new deal made, will Tony Khan step back and maybe let his shows breathe a little bit more? To me, that's the big question, but all of it ties into the uncertainty of a new TV deal.
Yeah, I mean, the Hollywood Reporter story that came out today with Kathleen Finch, the new chair and chief content officer, or the chair and chief content officer of Warner Brothers Discovery U.S. Network Groups. That's a mouthful. One of the quotes that has to feel good to Tony Khan is, one of the things that we're doing around sports is creating shoulder programming to hold on to those fans. AEW pulls huge numbers, so we're working with a wrestling team to figure out what kind of new content we can build that's not a wrestling ring. If you're Tony Khan and you hear that, you know, you keep that in the back of your mind when you're thinking, how much do they value us? Because they're the only, it's tough to find a show that can produce 52 weeks of original content a year that will land you number one in the key demo more often than not on Wednesday night, or certainly top five. So there's some good things there. But, yeah, the TV landscape and what is going to be paid has a lot to do with how much other people that are counterbidding are willing to bid. It's not just what Discovery and Warner want to pay based on their current mindset when it comes to budget and spending. Some of it has to do, if you want to keep this program, someone else might bid more, but AEW's got to find a couple counter bidders, and the TV landscape is very different, especially when so many of these networks are now going to be under the same umbrella, the same conglomerates.
Absolutely. And so you're left, if you don't get a TV deal that let's say they give them $100 million a year, about, I think it's $44 million a year now, roughly. If they won't double it, if they say, well, we'll give you $50 million or $60 million or whatever it is, I don't know what the number is. I mean, competing for free agents against WWE people actually want to go there now in Paul era, that's going to be tough. And Tony Khan's going to have to decide, do I pour more of my money into this to stay competitive and sign the free agents I need to sign? I've got other things going on. Do I cut bait? I would find it hard to believe he would do that, because this is a lifelong dream of his. we will find out a whole heck of a lot once they sign that new deal about whether some of the finer points that you have been talking about for literally years now that you would like to see fixed in the hopes of attracting more viewers, whether they would slow down and make those changes, or if it's just going to be roller coaster TV until they're no longer in business.
Yeah. And part of the competitive, there are cheap ways, there are less expensive ways than outbidding WWE for existing talent that you can be competitive when, and part of that is building the AEW brand and who you are and what you stand for. And there's going to be enough talented wrestlers out there that for whatever reason aren't going to be in WWE that you can be a strong number two and be profitable. But part of that is making the wrestlers you sign seem like bigger stars and than they are when they arrive. And that's a weakness of AEW. They're just the wrestlers show up and they get treated as if they're stars, and there's not a real strategy to making them seem like bigger stars. And number two, going to the point that I spent too much time on for your taste yesterday with Jason, is part of it is the aesthetics of it, is making yourself look more major league, putting more pizzazz into the presentation. And I bring up some specific ways to do that because I think talking in generalities is easy. Being specific is a little more risky, but it, I think, is also more illustrative of the point that's being made. And AEW is just weak in that way. You can walk into someone's home and tell if they have an eye for design or care about that stuff or not. Some people do, some people don't. Doesn't make you a good or bad person. But if you're a wrestling promoter, you should recognize, is our presentation stale and inferior to compared to the competition? Are there some cheap and easy ways we can fix that, either by hiring someone or spending some money? And will that make our wrestlers seem like they're bigger stars, not necessarily than Roman Reigns is, but bigger stars than the current atmosphere does? And that worked against WCW. You can learn from history. That worked against the territories with their syndicated shows opposite of Vince McMahon's WWF in the mid-80s. It worked for WCW in finally competing with the WWF in the Monday Night War era, when Nitro surprised all of us with a much better leap into better production values and presentation that suddenly made WCW go from a regional behind-the-times, low-budget competitor on TBS to a company that suddenly looked more major league, didn't have to do with the booking or the match quality or the promo quality. It looked more major league than the WWF instantly the second Nitro showed up. AEW, and it is important and it is worth time talking about, and it is one of the things that they can do that doesn't need a gigantic TV deal in order to close the gap between them and WWE more than I think Tony and his team are currently figuring. Go ahead, Eric. Yeah.
I get the sense that AEW's infrastructure, the office, the backstage stuff, that their operation is significantly smaller than WWE. Like, I don't want to call it bare bones. I mean, I think it started bare bones, but they either don't have the people there to bring such things up. People do bring it up and Tony ignores it because he and Chris Harrington are just focused on the spreadsheet of the what, literally at what point in that minute people tuned out of the match that brought him under a million. I don't know what the answer is, but
I don't want a pilot flying a plane, Eric, who's constantly polling the people in the back about whether he's doing a good job flying the plane. Like, oh, we should change course, we should change altitude, because people in the back are telling us they enjoyed the last minute more than this minute. It's like, just know what you're doing, have a vision, and execute it, and don't worry about the little minute-by-minute stuff.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, still, tonight's Dynamite, I enjoyed it greatly. There are warning signs on the horizon, most vividly in the future gates that they've got, future advances, heading into the winter and fall.
Yeah. And there's just – I watched this show, and I'm like – there's so much talent here that I think is being underserved by the infrastructure and production at this point. All right. We'll keep rolling through calls here. Thanks everybody for calling and holding. We'll try to pick up the pace here and get to everybody. We'll go to Don in St. Louis, Missouri next. Don, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. What do you think of Dynamite?
Good. How are you guys doing tonight? So I was thinking about AEW. I feel like some wrestlers on the roster have like identity problem, because it seems like someone wants to be heels and like, no, like the Nyla Rose segment tonight. You have two heels arguing about each other while you're talking about going after another heel. You feel like there's like, and also with Swerve, who's a babyface but wants to be a heel. At the same time, you feel like there's confusing to the fans a little bit.
Yes. I think there's way too much confusion in terms of not, you can say, oh, it's Shades of Grey are fine and all that, but there should be some semblance of coherence to who at the core these people are that the larger audience should be reacting favorably or unfavorably to. And Eric, I just get mixed signals with so many characters. Swerve last week, Mark Sterling coming out and undercutting Swerve's heel promo by saying that he's an idiot or whatever he said. this week we have Anna Jay coming out and then challenging Nyla Rose, who's stolen a belt, and Vicky's acting like a heel, and is Jade Cargill a face or a heel? Because she had her, it's like there is something to be said still, Eric, right, for having people face each other where you have a home team and an away team, so to speak, that kind of dynamic of a heel and a face?
Agreed. It is the thing that has drawn the most money in pro wrestling over history. They were in Toronto tonight. I still remember reading the wrestling magazines that Hulk Hogan and Paul Orndorff, which was my first big turn feud when I was watching as a kid, you know, they drew almost 70,000 people to a big outdoor stadium in Toronto. So face heel works. I think, yeah, I noticed that too. The example, Don, another example would be MJF on the show tonight. Is he heading toward a face turn or not? I did notice that Nyla thing too. So she's running around with this belt that she stole, and then they had set up a heel rampage match. And the only thing I could figure is that's just reflective of a thin roster on the women's side. They're going to put a women's match, one women's match on Dynamite, one women's match on Rampage every week. And that was just the hand they needed. They're building toward Nyla and Jade, possibly at the pay-per-view. And they needed somebody to be a sacrificial lamb for Nyla, who's not been on TV. I think she's mostly been relegated to dark six woman tags. To get a win over somebody that was more of a known quantity, but why is Anna Jay coming out there? She's a heel. It just didn't make sense. Is Nyla doing a face turn? I don't think so. She's got this Twitter persona where she's really kind of funny at times. And is that bleeding over here? I don't know. But yeah, fans ultimately, though, will sort it out for you, right? They will pick a side, and they will declare somebody the babyface and somebody the heel, or they won't react at all, and that's the worst-case scenario, right?
Well, or maybe the worst case is fans chanting MJF in the middle of a mock Hangman promo, because MJF is neither a face or a heel, and people are sort of liking him or not liking him, and then it's undercutting something else really good going on, and then you have some fans booing the MJF chant, and it's just a distraction. I don't think you want to let fans sort it out. I think it's your job as a booker and as producers and wrestlers to convey a distinct core constitution to each of the characters that in your mind is designed to elicit either cheers or boos, people rooting for you to succeed or enjoying seeing you fall flat on your face. And ambiguity and randomness and contradictions week to week or within the same show is not serving that emotional resonance that draws money in professional wrestling, as you say, Eric, historically predominantly. That yes, there are face-face matchups, heel-heel matchups that draw money, but those are mega stars in dream matches. That shouldn't be happening on a TBS title feud or in the middle of a Swerve promo opposite of the Acclaimed with Sterling coming out. Like, that's just muddying the waters too much. It feels too randomized right now.
I mean, I feel like they've been building this Swerve heel turn for months and months and months, right?
Mark Sterling undercut last week by walking out and insulting him, making the fans go, wait, do I not like Swerve or do I not like Mark Sterling more? Why add that static?
Just because they needed somebody to bump for the Acclaimed.
Exactly. And that's not worth it. That's not worth a trade-off. And that's sloppy booking. Or it's at least a booking philosophy I disagree with. Tom, back to you.
You know, all
that said, go ahead, Eric. Sorry.
All that said, I'm not going to lose too much sleep about non-title TBS women's title match on Friday that nobody's going to watch, right?
I think what you do though is you go, is this, it's sort of like, you don't, if you're an editor of an article, you don't sweat a missing comma, but it's still an example if you have someone writing for you and there's these little grammatical mistakes that don't change the reader's comprehension of the article, but you know it's the wrong thing to do. It might be a sign of sloppiness in other areas. It might be just a lack of attention to detail that's concerning. And that's what I would say, picking out the little things that you're not going to sweat are still worth bringing up and are still symbolic of something that is, I think, a symptom of a larger problem within Tony Khan's booking philosophy and execution. John, back to you. Anything else?
So I was thinking about tonight. So you had MJF issues with the firm tonight. But also another thing, you have his former friends, like the Pinnacle, being randomly put together as a babyface group for no reason. I wonder if, like, next week you see, like, a swerve in the future where maybe MJF is babyface and all his buddies come down, and then he cash in his chip on either Hangman or Paige this week. And I also thought that was, like, a good, strong promo from Paige that he really needed. I was wondering, you think, is that possible in the future?
Thanks, Don. Appreciate the call. Eric, you can extrapolate from that what you want. I will throw you one item, and that is, does anyone care enough about Stokely Hathaway's group to be at all concerned about MJF's reaction to Stokely? Like, it just feels like it's this new faction that's been barely established, and now we're just rushing into dissension or a tease or a swerve of dissension. The firm hasn't been established enough for me as a viewer, much less just a podcaster kind of analyzing the product more from more of a distance. Just as a viewer, I have no stake and no emotional reaction to anything going on between Stokely and MJF. I don't care. But they're putting it in a situation where it's required that viewers should care for it to be worth putting on TV.
What, you mean you didn't think they established the firm on great solid footing when Stokely Hathaway did a 20-minute uninterrupted promo saying what each person's mission statement was a few weeks back?
Yeah.
That didn't establish it for you? Yeah, I mean, I don't think they've been together on screen since then. There's been little bits and pieces where they set up, you know, Ethan Page versus one of the private party guys on Rampage Friday, because, again, they got to fill that hour with something. Yeah, I don't know. to Don's point, you know, they are sort of seemingly putting parts of the Pinnacle back together bit by bit here, right? The only ones missing are Tully and MJF at this point. However, I don't while that would be, I guess, depending on how you did it, that could be an interesting direction. Pinnacle versus MJF turns face, and it's the Pinnacle with MJF as faces versus the firm. But the problem is nobody cares about the firm so far. That's
not a small problem either.
Yeah, mid-card. They're at best mid-card heels who have not been established as anything more than, you know, gatekeeper guys to loot, you know, to the title shot guy to get to win over on the way up.
I think MJF sharing screen time with Stokely Hathaway is diminishing MJF at this point, because Stokely hasn't earned, at this point, as a character within the AEW universe, screen time with MJF.
Yeah, I gotta let that play out for a few more weeks before I render a judgment, I think.
But there's going to be two turns of breakup and a postscript to that whole feud by the time we get to that, Eric, unfortunately, based on the pace this is going.
They got 5 weeks of Dynamite to sell before Full Gear.
Well, but that doesn't mean rushing a six-month storyline into 6 weeks with the firm and MJF, I would argue.
You know, I wonder – I know you want to pick up the pace, so I'll leave it there. Go ahead.
Okay.
All right, caller.
Well, it's more for the callers, too, their sake. I can be here all night, but the callers can't. All right, let's I'm going to go to Sam in Nebraska, and then we do have a call from Toronto. Could be an on-site correspondent. So after Sam, we'll go to them. But everybody else who's on hold, please hold on, too, if you can. Sam, go ahead. Thanks for calling. Thanks for holding for so long. What are your thoughts on Dynamite?
Is it me?
Yeah, Sam, it's you.
No, this is not Sam.
Oh, well,
Chris.
My fault. Who is it? Oh, hey, Chris. Sorry about that.
No,
Chris,
that's fine. I'm actually in Guthrie Center, Iowa.
Oh, cool. Well, I apologize, Chris. Let's just redo this. Let's go to Chris in Iowa next. Chris, what city in Iowa are you from?
Guthrie Center. Thank you, Wade.
Awesome. Where's Guthrie Center?
Actually, Sam's a very good friend of mine.
Oh, cool.
I've just been kind of listening tonight. I was actually on the phone with him while watching Dynamite. And, so this is my first time calling. It's great to be on. Everyone go VIP.
I agree with that sentiment.
So I guess my question is, why is FTR not interested in the Acclaimed? Like, why are we doing all this stuff with the Acclaimed and FTR is not getting their shot?
In the sense, it's not so much that they're not concerned about the claim, but they're not concerned about the title getting a title match.
Yeah,
or is your
yeah.
issue
like,
just
like
yeah,
they're
yeah,
all about
yeah.
collecting these titles. They're collecting these titles, and we're not worried about the one
yeah.
that is the AEW title.
Yeah, especially when the Gun Boys are making fun of them for not having a title shot or being champs in that way. Eric, talk about that.
I don't have much to say because Dax on his Twitter feed is asking the same question seemingly three times a week. He wants to know the same answer to the question you do, Chris, and keeps complaining about it. Wants Tony Khan book us, I think, is his common post.
Eric, how do you feel about that, by the way? Like, because to me, I almost feel like there's a game of chicken going on here, which is FTR is super popular, and they're hoping they can rile up Twitter to push Tony Khan into correcting course on how they perceive they should be booked. And then you got Tony Khan going, I'm not going to let people goad me through social media harassment into giving them more of a push, so I'm just going to be stubborn and not push them, even to my detriment, because I don't want to set a precedent that this works. It just feels childish on everyone's part.
Yeah, my answer was going to be exactly that. Grow up, everyone. I may still be processing my trauma from being there representing the torch at the post AEW All Out media scrum, which was about as uncomfortable as I've ever been in my life, outside of like a relative on their deathbed or whatever. And I'm just over the backstage drama in public, just get in the boat and row in the same darn direction. FTR's best matches have been under the ROH banner, right? I mean, the Briscoes matches. They had a match that New Japan Britain against Aussie Open that I don't think New Japan, as of a couple days ago, still hadn't posted, that I'm really anxious to see, because it's supposed to be a great match. Yeah, it seems like a lot of their greatness has occurred outside of an AEW ring this year. So I don't know if he just views them as ROH wrestlers. I don't know if he thinks he's got such a hot act in the Acclaimed that he's backburnering FTR. I mean, that's probably that and the ROH thing are the two leading answers I have to explain that. And he knows it's probably not too believable if the Acclaimed get in the ring with FTR that the Acclaimed are going to walk out with the belts, right? Because FTR is obviously such the superior team. Is he saving the match for next year? I don't know. First pay-per-view of 2023.
Nevertheless, like, everything you say is all very viable speculation or conjecture, but it doesn't change kind of what Chris is bringing up, which is it's awkward to watch FTR not just stand around and be focused on something other than what we believe as fans their characters are focused on, which is being the best tag team and proving it by holding the most important tag team titles in the whole world. At least that should be how it's portrayed. So even if, like, in the end you said, oh, maybe he's saving it, well, but you should address why they're not going after it right now, or it undercuts the whole notion that FTR's focus is on becoming champions.
Well, it's like you said, Wade, they addressed it by having the gun boys make fun of them, right? I mean, they turned, you know, internet BS into a line, right? Into an angle with those guys. Yeah. I don't know. Put your best teams against each other and let them go at it. That's how the promotion rose. And that's how you turn around, lagging advances when you're going back for Dynamite third and fourth time.
And don't wait too long, because how many Cody matches did we not get while he was fighting Nick Camarado or whoever? Like, and, you know, things happen. How many CM Punk matches didn't we get because he was happy Punk, just seeing if he still had his legs under him, and now it fell apart? Like, there just comes a point where it's like, just go with the hottest thing you got, and it's okay if in a year and a half you do a rematch and it's not the first time they ever wrestle. Or in 8 months you can do a full-fledged rematch feud. I would pick up the pace of the matches that people want, and I would augment my booking to accommodate them right now if I'm AEW. I think there's, you know, and who knows, with Miro, it's like, when he's available to you, get more out of him when it seems like the crowd is red hot for him. I feel like there's just too much kind of waiting around or planning long-term to delay the gratification or save things for later, that leads to the matches just never happening. Or, like, even the case of Hangman Page, where the wrestler's cooled off by the time you get around to it.
And that's
Todd
have had for a long time, right? And it's one I happen to agree with. Quit. Why are you being so stingy with these matches? Let her rip. There's always more matches. You can always run stuff back, right, in 6 months or whatever.
And it doesn't mean, and no, Eric, and it doesn't mean, I'll add this, do them like you, like, where it's just a throwing out there without
proper
build.
Yeah.
Like, don't just, oh, here's a dream match, we're just going to announce it on 6 days' notice or 2 days' notice or 1 week notice. Like, I don't mean that. There is this third option besides hot-shotting or never getting around to it or waiting too long to get to it when it cools off. That's just like, book a feud between FTR and the Acclaimed right now. That'd be a face-to-face matchup, so it'd be awkward, but maybe you can get to it or whatever. You know what it's like? Whatever. Read the room. and figure out a six to 10 week plan to make it happen quicker. But build it up. Don't just go right to it.
In Tony Khan's defense, if Jeff Hardy didn't have his incident, I mean, wasn't arrested, maybe the FTR was going to beat the Hardys. You know, who knows? The Hardys were supposed to get the run with the belts, not the Bucks. A lot of Tony Khan's long-term booking plans have been thrown asunder, but he has not historically shown in the brief history of this promotion that he's willing to give away these matches in short order.
Yeah. All right, Chris, back to you. Sorry about that.
Well, for the better match would have been FTR versus the Bucks than FTR versus the Hardys. Mm. But that's beside the point. You're talking about running matches back and stuff, but like Danielson versus Jericho, we've had three of those matches. Like if you go with you're talking about that.
Yep.
Do we need to have that match three times already when Danielson could have been fighting anybody?
So the first time they built to it at the pay-per-view, right? Was that at All Out? I mean, I remember that being at All Out, and I remember being having high expectations, being somewhat disappointed in the match. I don't even think it hit 4 stars. And then I think they went back to it so quickly because CM Punk tore his triceps and then imploded at the press conference, and they had to have a tournament, and they're like, well, what do we do? Well, we can give Danielson his win back, right? That doesn't really answer the question. The only, I don't have a problem with that. They were booking on the fly. They were just trying to put on a show week to week in the wake of that all out press conference and the injuries. They went back to it tonight, right? And that seemed to be the only one that seemed a little redundant. And why did they do it? They did it because they wanted to have a big name match for the Toronto, their first time in Toronto. And I guess they wanted to further the Daniel Garcia story that they've been telling.
And I would say in between those two things in importance, but not insignificant, is they're trying to get over that Jericho is on this dishonor, this ring of dishonor campaign, or the whatever, ring of Jericho, where he's trying to dishonor the code of honor and ruin the legacy of Ring of Honor. And Bryan Danielson is the guy who's the biggest name, who has that legacy that they have. So it plays into the storyline that Jericho has established. And the match feels less random and almost like if you're going to do that gimmick with Jericho, you got to have Danielson step up. And they dug out some old Ring of Honor footage, which Jason and I were talking yesterday about them not doing enough of or much of any of. And we actually got some vintage Danielson Ring of Honor footage, which is cool that they had that. And it actually made that video package really compelling in terms of, I think, making this match feel different than the first two. Yeah, go ahead, Chris. Anything else?
No, I guess the last thing I have to say is to Sean Spears, glad you were able to show back up, make your money. You got a beautiful wife. You know, I think he's one of the big winners of AEW.
Do you want to see him on TV regularly or not?
Not Chris? At all. Not at all.
I've sensed that.
He was right. Their big surprise, and I was just like, why am I watching this? And
I don't believe
Marshall right there, too. So.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Call again.
So, yeah. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Cool. Bye. I do not blame anyone for feeling that way about a 10-10-10 guy. And Sean Spears is better than that, but they just have to figure out how to feature him in a way that doesn't lead to just that level of understandable disdain and go away heat that he has. Who's the other one? The other person he just brought? Oh, QT Marshall. I QT is not being overexposed right now. QT is a good heel he's a good heel in that role, which is, you know, take a cheap shot and then get beat up. I don't have a problem with how they're using him now. I had a problem with him being featured against Cody Rhodes when there were, 14 to 24 other wrestlers I'd rather see Cody against in a full-fledged feud. That was not justifiable, but QT's fine now, right, Eric?
Yeah, properly slotted. I even see him on New Japan Strong every now and again. He did something smart tonight when he came to the ring. They did not get a ring introduction that aired on TV, so they were already in the ring, which defines them down. But he tried to get fans to do the War Joe chants, right? He goaded him into it, and smart thing for a heel to do. That's what you want him to do, put over the baby faces, which is – that's his role.
He was not wrong that that's the dumbest name this side of Swerving Keith Lee, though.
It has a – you can chant it, I guess. I haven't really given it that much thought.
It's not as bad as the Swerve Keith Lee name, that I will not say. But Warjo, it's ripe for a heel to make fun of for how unimaginative it is. You know, it's like instead of FTR, it could have been Cashdax. It's like, I mean,
yeah. Well, it's like hockey players. Everyone just gets an R appended to their last name, and that's their nickname. Kaner.
Yeah.
Patrick Kane is Kaner. Jonathan Taves is Taser. Yeah.
Yeah. So Jericho and Garcia, they can be like Lion Danny.
Oof. That is
good. No, and it's intentionally bad, but yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's zip over to Toronto, and if I believe you're calling from Toronto, go ahead, state your name, and let us know if you're at the show tonight.
Yeah, it's Anthony from Oshawa, Ontario, Canada. I was at the show tonight.
Great, Anthony, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling up.
Thank you.
What'd you think of the experience? Talk about it.
Yeah, it was great. The arena Coca-Cola Coliseum held about 7,500 people. Probably, I usually go to the WWE shows at the Air Canada Center. So it was a smaller venue, but packed house. When I walked into the building, I saw the stage, and the first thing I said was, wow, and people were just amazed to be there back at a wrestling show. We were hoping we'd get it, 3 years ago, but it's finally here. It was a lot of fun. A lot of big names. Obviously, when I bought the ticket, I was hoping for Kenny, the Bucks, but the show didn't disappoint tonight.
What kind of difference in atmosphere and fan type compared to WWE? Like, what was your – like? Is this just a bunch of people who would have gone to WWE, they'd happen to go to AEW, or did it feel like a different demographic?
Totally different demographic. I was at the Raw show in August, obviously families, but I noticed even that show with the Gargano Pop, it was more adult at that show than previous ones that I went to, but this one was fully adult. Male, a lot of males, I didn't see a lot of kids.
So one specific I want to ask you about is the dynamic with Moxley, Hangman, and MJF. And who was the most popular of those three? And do you think, and we talked about this earlier in the show, did MJF's presence and spotlight shining on him, from your perspective in the building, take away from what was being accomplished in hyping the match, for better or for worse? Maybe it will be justified in the end, but in terms of tonight during that segment, did it take away some of the momentum of what Moxley and Hangman were accomplishing, or do you think it added to it?
No, it for sure took away. So when Moxley and Paige were talking, he looked back and he was up there in the stands, MJF, and I have to go back and rewatch the promo because I was just fixated on MJF. We were chanting at him, cheering for him. But from what I gathered of the promo, that might have been Paige's best promo.
Who got a bigger pop, Chris Jericho or Sean Spears?
Oh God. I'll say Jericho, but I don't know why Spears got that big of a pop. People are still fixated.
Well, and what? And part of what I think hurt the Jericho pop, and I asked the tongue in cheek, but I'm asking it. I'm like, it actually was closer than it should have been. And is that without playing Judas? Like, was the crowd? Because the crowd just went into this for themselves, saying it on their own after Jericho came out to the other song. Was there like this sort of like, hey, wait, why don't we get to have Judas? The Lionheart gimmick's not worth ruining our sing-along experience. Was that a vibe in the crowd?
Oh, yeah. It got deflated. So when I bought the tickets, yeah. I was like, oh, we'll sing Judas. We'll get maybe the Jungle Boy song, different things like that. And, yeah, there, you could feel everyone around me was just, like, really disappointed.
Yeah, I felt for you. Eric Kroll, our coach, jump in with a question.
The one picture I saw on Twitter, it did not look like they were selling CM Punk shirts tonight. Was that the case? Did you eyeball the merch stands at all?
The merch stand was terrible. There was no wrestler shirts. It was just like AW logo with a Canadian flag in the back. One shirt with like all the wrestlers on it with Dynamite. But I don't know if that's usual or have you been to a show that has like wrestler merch? Because I know at the WWE shows there's a ton of wrestler merchandise.
Yeah, I mean, in Chicago for those three dates that I went to in September, I mean, there was CM Punk shirts there, but, you know, yeah, there were more wrestler shirts. There were Danhausen shirts. He's from Detroit. He's practically an honorary Canadian. That's weird because usually they have a few wrestler shirts. But like I've been to a ton of AEW shows, and what's always struck me is for a company that's derided when it started as a T-shirt company, at the live shows they don't have like a wide variety. Like I want like a dream store where there's T-shirts for 24 different wrestlers, and that's never been the case with them. You got to order it online, which I guess maybe that's just the modern way of doing business.
I would think you'd want to sell as many T-shirts as you could, and it'd be worth packing a couple extra boxes. But you know, I don't understand that approach. But yeah, go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, I was disappointed. Shipping's a little more to come here, so I have bought shirts, but I was hoping to pick up a few more today. But no, there was nothing that I wanted.
I got the sense with Wardlow and Samoa Joe that Joe got a bigger pop than Wardlow. Was that noticeable?
He did. He got the Joe chant. People love Wardlow, but Joe got the bigger chant.
How? And this is a weird question, but how did the pop for Billy Gunn compare to that for Jungle Boy Jack Perry? Billy Gunn's roughly triple the age of Jack Perry, and you know, a completely different era. But I'm curious if you can compare the crowd enthusiasm for both.
Billy Gunn had the pop of the night. I think everyone was eager to chant the "Scissor Me Daddy" chant. Oh, Scissor Me Daddy! You could feel it when you walked into the arena.
Yeah, that's amazing. How about the pop for Orange Cassidy coming out and winning a title?
Oh yeah. So I think the crowd was split between Cassidy and Pac. I'm a big fan of Cassidy. Actually, a fan behind me. I was dressed up as Orange Cassidy, and he said that, he's going to win the title tonight. They just brought out the confetti guns, and I'm like, I didn't want to know that. Crowd was split on those two, but big pop when he won.
AEW should bring confetti to the ring for every title match, so people like you know that, and then it won't ruin anything.
Exactly.
Yeah. Eric, jump in with another question.
Yeah, did they tape anything after Dynamite was done, or was that it?
No, Cassidy just went on the mic. He actually said that he didn't want to – he doesn't like holding things, so he doesn't want to hold the title. So Chris Statlander came out.
Wow.
Chris Statlander came out with a backpack, and he put it in a backpack, and he put it on his shoulders.
That's actually pretty funny.
Did Tony Khan come out at all? Did Tony Khan
Tony
come out
came
at all?
Out at the Tony came out at before Dynamite. Just hyped up the crowd. Said we have a big signing tonight. And then after the show, he came out to congratulate Cassidy and like, gave him a hug.
And was he booed at all?
No. So when I was coming to the show, I figured he would get booed or people would chant Omega or just boo that they weren't there, but none of that happened. There was a small CM Punk chant, and that got kiboshed pretty quickly by fans around us.
It got kiboshed how?
Like people were telling them to stop chanting for CM Punk. Like,
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hangman Page made reference. Finish your thought. Sorry.
There was a lot of negativity towards Punk.
Interesting. Hangman mentioned his friends who weren't around. How cognizant was the crowd of that being a reference to the Bucks? How did they react to that? It seemed like there was a bit of an ooh.
Yeah, we were like, are they going to show up today? I guess there wasn't that big of a chance. Personally, I figured he was referring the Bucks, obviously.
What else do you want to pass along to us, either off camera or just kind of thoughts on the experience, things that you'll remember or that stood out from the show?
Thing I remember is the title win by Orange Cassidy. Buddy and of myself, we both sat like four rows back from the ring, and that was the closest I've ever sat, and that was a really cool experience to see the wrestlers up close. Usually sit like in the 100s, so that was really cool. Got the chant. Disappointed, didn't see a few of the wrestlers I wanted, but overall it was a good night. The show flowed very well. I couldn't tell when there was commercials or when there was a commercial. Justin Roberts was very good at emceeing the crowd. They had an hour-long Dark Elevation taping at the beginning. It was just a bunch of squash matches, but it was fun.
What kind of response did Renee get?
She got a really good response. Crowd cheered for her. I think they knew who she was, obviously.
Yeah. Cool. Eric, any closing question for Anthony?
I do not.
All right, cool. Anthony, thanks for calling up. If they come back to Toronto or anywhere you drive to in Canada, let us know.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. All right, let's jump next to Deke in Michigan, and then Brian's in Boston's on deck. We still got Javier time coming up at the end here. Deke, thank you for holding. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, I got a couple things, guys. Thanks, man. As for the merchandise question that just got brought up, I was at the Blood and Guts show in Detroit, and we were shocked at how little merch there was. They had a Blood and Guts shirt. There was Danhausen shirts, Punk shirts, and I want to say Adam Cole. And that was it. There was nothing else. Like, very shocked. And the strange, obviously Danhausen is from Detroit, but, like, of all people to have shirts, you know, it was just, I don't know, kind of strange that was the selection of stuff that we got. And I think Adam Cole was already hurt at that point as well, if I remember correctly. So anyway, that's neither here nor there, but just another someone who's been in the arena. Somebody brought this up earlier, but my gosh, was it like Gravedigger night tonight? Like they pulled some people out that I didn't even know were still under contract almost. You know, QT Marshall comes out. The Butcher and the Blade showed up, and they're going to have a match. Tony Nese and Smart Mark, I know Smart Mark's been around, but they're getting major TV time. And then there was just some other ones that were getting prominent time that are more like Rampage guys. Private Parties back out there, and Ethan Page, and Anna and Nyla with the only talking segment, I think, in history that didn't get interrupted. Oh, I guess Anna did interrupt that talking segment. So, yeah, that's another one, but it at least lasted a little bit. I just thought that was strange that they pulled all these guys, and then Sean Spears, obviously, just out of the woodwork, these people came today. I didn't understand exactly why that was.
almost all of the people, many of the people you mentioned were from Canada. The Butcher and the Blade, I think, might be from Buffalo, but the Bunny is from Canada, and Sean Spears is from St. Catharines in Canada. So I think that's the common thread. I'm Ethan Page from Canada. I'm trying to pull on a common thread there. That's all I'm coming up with.
Yeah, well, and, you know, that makes perfect sense, but it's also, that may be, being that those people who they are, and God bless them, I'm sure they're all great people, but that's worse than even doing the cheap heat, your local football team sucks. I mean, what does anybody else on earth care that those people are from Canada? I mean, nobody cares. I mean, these people have not been on TV forever. I mean, God bless them. I'm glad they're getting those checks, but come on, man. Anyway, don't kill me on this one, guys. But I had nothing for the Hangman Page promo at all. And, you know, call me. I mean, I guess he had already lost before he even started talking, because I don't care if Abraham Lincoln did the Gettysburg Address wearing what Hangman Page had on, nobody's going to take him seriously. I mean, I'm sorry, man. Like, as soon as I see him, I'm just like, what's this guy doing? And it just takes me out of thinking this guy is a legitimate guy. Every week he's got something. Yeah, today it was the jeans and the mustard yellow shirt. I mean, every week he's got something goofy on. And it's just like, it's just goofy looking. I don't know. I mean, to each their own. But, and then I found it. I was listening to him and everything, and he yelled, "I'm a man, I'm a man." Like, and all I could think of was the football coach. "I'm a man, I'm 40. For the whole rest of the time. That's all I could think about.
Eric, what do you think of that being a key point that Hangman took exception to, that Mox called him a boy, or kid. I'm sorry, a kid.
Kid.
He's a good kid.
Kid, yep.
Yeah, was that kind of a thin-skinned, out of context, overreaction by Hangman that made him look bad, or was that kind of a key moment for him to go, you know, I'm younger than you, and I haven't had, you know, the experience that you did, but if you're going to try to compliment me, you have to understand I'm a dad, I'm a man.
My notes say, am I a kid really the sort of hinge point to this feud? Because that's kind of thin gruel. And then Hangman Page went on and delivered the rest of the promo, in which they did about as much as they could, I thought, short of a physical angle, to build this match on a title match on, what, a 2 or 3 week build. They hadn't, you know, done a ton to build it. And that's one of the things they had to do tonight. And I think they did. I mean, I don't think anybody expects Hangman Page to win next week. And I like the promo, and I'm glad Page is secure enough in his manhood to wear flower jeans. That wouldn't be my fashion choice, but I'm a washed 51-year-old. I couldn't pull it off.
I think with Hangman taking exception being called a kid is a little rich, considering how emotionally fragile his character has been portrayed for the last year and a half. Right? Yes. Like, I mean, if you want to be a man, then don't hang out with John Silver and act like, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm not to pick on John Silver, but like, he's not exactly carrying himself as this emotionally stable alpha male in that company. So I get, you know, as a 31-year-old ex-champion who's a dad going, I'm not a kid, I'm a man. But maybe kind of understand your character might, from a Moxley standpoint, maybe you don't have as strong of a case and you want to live it, not say it, for maybe a year before you get real offended by it.
Yeah, Moxley seemed thoroughly unimpressed by he had sort of a, I think you're protesting too much kind of look on his face. A part of me wonders if this, and this is probably a reach, and you can blow me out of the sky if you think so, please do. Part of me wonders whether this promo was in response to CM Punk's all-out press conference where he said, you know, he basically derided Page as this world champion who hadn't done anything in the business, right? A child or whatever, right? Yeah. Did he call him a child? He might have called him a child. And so was this sort of his way of working that into a storyline? I don't know. That might be far-fetched, but I'll throw it out there.
By the way, so I don't forget to bring this up. It's related to the segment. Moxley talked about champions melting down or cracking under the pressure of being champion. Like the beginning of his promo was focused on some champions crumble under the pressure and self-destruct, some sooner than others. And is that a dig at CM Punk for crumbling at the presser right after winning the title? Or is that reaching, or it's just hard to say because you could apply other candidates to who that target of that was? What do you think, Eric?
Well, who would the other candidates be? I'm trying to think.
I mean, Hangman held the title for quite a while, but
November to May.
So. Yeah, he didn't, so I don't think you can say.
I mean,
the obvious
one is Punk, because he had two very short reigns, right? The simplest explanation is usually the right one.
Because I kind of get in the sense Moxley wants to be the locker room leader and the centerpiece act of that company. And as, by the way, number of people I talked to in AEW, wrestlers and otherwise, were less than impressed with who Punk was, the 2021-2022 version of him, and felt like, for a variety of reasons, he wasn't the guy. And I think Moxley felt like, hey, I'm here. I'm right here, people. I'm ready to carry the football to the end zone for you. And so I think that it comes through a little bit in some of the things that he says, either during the Punk hype or now post-Punk. Go ahead, Dee.
I think you guys are onto something. I don't think that's far-fetched, either one of you guys, for what you said right there, especially with the amount of shots that have been taken in the past couple of months. So, no, I don't think that's far-fetched whatsoever. And, Wade, I think you're exactly right. Well, both of you guys are exactly right. I said the same thing. I'm like, are we fighting because the guy called him kid and he's a man? I'm like, what is this, eighth grade? Like, what are we doing here? I thought the exact same thing, and I thought the way he was acting proved Moxley right. Wade, you're exactly right. I thought exactly that. So to me, it was like, yeah, you're just playing right into what Mox is saying about you, dude. It didn't work for me. And then the best part, though, was he tried to cut himself open hard way and then wipe blood on Moxley. Like, yeah, of all people, the blood's going to affect. John Moxley is the guy you're trying to wipe blood on? Like, come on, man. That just, you picked the wrong guy to try to intimidate with blood. Last thing, Renee's there. That's a great hire for them. But if you hired her, why on earth do you have Alex Marvez still doing interview? And he's the one that only he got to talk more than the other guys did.
He did
more than Renee.
He did a dissertation. He did a whole dissertation future cap.
Yes, he did. And he was talking a mile a minute of what he memorized, chapter 3 of whatever the script was. He memorized that whole thing and rattled it off. Renee gets to say two words in her backstage thing. And, oh, guess what? Shocking. There was an interruption. And then Tony did a bunch of stuff, and Tony did the Moxley intro, which I guess, conflict of interest. They didn't want Renee doing that one. That makes sense, I guess. But they had all these other people doing multiple interviews. When you just hired Renee, and she gets interrupted during her thing, and she just stands there holding the mic. I mean, at this point, they could, you can wrestle a broomstick and put it. You could tie a microphone to a broomstick and just have it sitting there at this point with every single interview getting interrupted. And that sets up a feud. It's just so repetitive, guys. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure in 3 years, Tony Schiavone has never once gotten anything but his introductory sentence out.
Right.
He's got somebody in the ring. They always just take the microphone and then he slithers off into the corner, unless he's going to be involved in the angle. I had another point, but it is escaping me at the moment.
What do you think of the Renee acquisition, by the way, Eric?
It's fine. She's a talented backstage interviewer. I hope they don't put her on commentary. That was not her strong suit. She's an engaging person. I wonder, this was the point I was going to ask. When do they try and work Renee into the Heat? Is that going to happen with MJF right off the bat, if it's MJF and Moxley for full gear? Are they going to work the Heat angle with Renee? Mm. I don't know how. I guess it depends on what they do, if they did. I wondered why it took this long. Was it just Renee wanted to have a child and then, you know, spend some time at home being a parent? Tony Khan not make the offer. I know she had a year-long non-compete after she left WWE, which probably wouldn't have held up in court, but also probably wouldn't have been worth the legal expense to fight it. Is this the result of Tony Khan's summer of discontent melding into a frenzied fall and Moxley working on a handshake deal? And it's like, well, what about Renee? Have you thought about her? Right. As he's right. I mean, I'm curious as to, did Tony always want to bring Renee in, or, and Renee was just, you know, resisting, or was this, you know, is this more the result of Renee approaching him at this point?
I don't know who approached you, but I think Renee, you had COVID and you had motherhood. And I think that just, you know, that just precluded anything happening sooner, but it seems like a very natural move to make.
Yeah, her husband went to rehab. I forgot about that part.
Yeah. So a lot of things happen. I mean, it's a natural fit. If Renee wants to be on the road, you know, it's not a matter of money. John's going to, you know, John and Renee collectively are going to get a lot of money as a family, whether Renee is on the job or not. And that's not to diminish Renee. I'm just saying Moxley is probably the top paid guy in the company right now, because CM Punk's not collecting paychecks right now. Well, maybe he is. Actually, I shouldn't say that. I don't know the situation there, that obviously. But of active people on the roster, I suspect Moxley's the top paid guy. So they're fine. But, you know, Renee might have had that itch, and she's really good at what she does. And I hope that she's a prominent face of the brand, so to speak, because I think she's a real professional. And, But, you know,
It doesn't move numbers or anything, right? I don't think anybody's going to tune in to see her, but that's not her role, right? The announcers aren't necessarily supposed to.
I think you can put yourself in a dangerous zone if the only moves you make are the ones that move the needle, as opposed to understand. I'll even go to the newspaper example. Typos don't make or break whether someone subscribes to a newspaper, but there's a lot of things that are at that level that if you don't pay attention to them can undercut your business and undercut your trust with your readership and the effectiveness of what you're doing. So to me, like, you don't want to just go, well, the only thing we care about are the big signings and the big main events. You want to have all that other stuff. Yes, video packages. Yes, shots outside the arena or the concourse. All those little things you pick on me for bringing up count. And so does having a really smooth professional interviewer who makes those wrestlers feel like bigger stars. And frankly, for a lot of the ones that are greener, need someone who's more steady on the mic. And you know, the Lance Russells and the Mean Gene Okerlunds, there's people who've been really good at interviews in different ways over the decades. Renee is one of them. And she can actually, I think, help elevate the overall product in terms of some of the green interviews that need someone to kind of be the glue that holds them together a little more. And honestly, have the experience to say, hey, let's redo this. And here's a tip. Here's a suggestion on how to position ourselves differently, or how to have a different cadence. So, yeah, I mean, she's not instantly a difference maker. No one's going to watch or not watch. But I think paying attention to those things and having about, you know, 20, 30 little things like that or medium things like that that add up to a more professional, smooth product are important and things that Tony, I don't think, is always prioritized. Deke, any closing words from you?
No, guys, that's it, man. Appreciate it. As always, anybody out there listening, go VIP, 11-year subscriber here. Love it. It's the best sheet that you're going to read, especially if you like real journalism. So go VIP, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. All right, cool. Let's go to Bryant in Boston, and then Javier is up next. Bryant, we're not going to have time for emails. I'll take a look. But Bryant, welcome. Well, what did you think of Dynamite? Good to hear from you.
I'll try not to my way through a call. Why was Mark Sterling and Tony Nese on this show? That whole segment was stupid. I mean, the scissoring, the whole, like, he's just killing the Acclaim's vibe with Billy Gunn and everything. I mean, it's just, I don't want to see those two morons on my TV ever again. I mean, I don't watch AEW to watch those two yahoos ruin what's a perfectly good, entertaining storyline. Is the scissoring thing stupid considering, you know, what it actually means? Yeah, but, it, you know, it's funny. It makes me laugh. But, you know, it's good for what it is. And those morons are absolutely killing it. I don't understand why Tony Khan has his head so far up his own ass that he has those two on there ruining it.
I mean, I'll provide an explanation for why I think it's happening. I agree with you. I'm not a huge fan of it either. But so there's a pay-per-view in 5 weeks where I assume they are building toward the rubber match between Swerve and Our Glory and the Acclaimed.
We don't say that, Eric.
That was deliberate.
You flipped out. Part. Oh, okay.
Oh, no, it was deliberate.
Wow. Healing.
And so they need to give the Acclaimed an interim feud, and so they've decided on Tony Nese and Josh the Goods Woods, and they are attempting to put heat because the fans very much want the scissoring thing to be done, and Mark Sterling is the Joker that he is preventing them from doing
that. You get Twitter
right?
For that.
Bowens was on Twitter tonight saying, sorry, I can't even use scissor emojis in my tweets anymore. I've been told that we're banned from doing that. There's a cease and desist. Is it good? No, but it lends stakes to the eventual match that they'll do on Dynamite or Rampage. It'll be the tag title. We'll put up the tag titles, and in return, if we win, you give us the trademark to scissoring, and everyone's happy. Basic booking, but you know, they got to fill TV time every week. I used to say that about WWE all the time, and now I'm very sad that I'm saying it about AEW at this point.
They'd
yeah,
be better
the,
off.
The Mark Sterling character, just quick, Brian, is not, it's not something that should be associated with an act that is holding belts and is as over as the Acclaimed are. I think it's pulling them down. So either he needs to reframe,
yes,
his character needs to be reframed as more serious with more serious wrestlers, or he needs to be lower on the card doing his shtick on a different show, or at least on, with a lower level act.
Yeah, I actually found something that both Tony Khan and Jim Cornette have in common. They both have their heads so far up their own asses that they can't realize that they're wrong or see the light of day. But
I think you can overpush Mark Sterling and Tony Nese and not have that be the defining moment that you have your head up your ass. I mean, I think you need about 10 other things that are more important than that to go to that level. But nevertheless, a point taken.
Well, there were a lot of other things wrong that kind of add up to that, but
fair enough. I
thought the women's match was really good, and I don't want to hear from those morons who say that, sorry for using morons so much, but I'm kind of animated about this subject. I don't want to hear from those morons saying the crowd was dead during the women's show. Two things. First of all, it's not the women's fault that they're booked in the crappy segments that they are. That's on Tony Khan. Second of all, the crowd was not dead for that match. Granted, they weren't as alive as they could have been, but they weren't too bad. So I'm sick and tired of hearing that argument from people every week because it's not true. But I thought the women's wrestling was pretty good. I think the focus needs more on Toni Storm because she's the champion. And I was kind of surprised that Soraya wasn't there this week. I mean,
thankful?
I actually like that Soraya. I actually like that Soraya segment, so I'll disagree with you guys on that one. But call me crazy, but I actually like.
I'll call you a moron with your head up your ass.
Oh, <geez. laughs> That's not. Touché. Is that Minnesota nice way?
Well, I think you understand the spirit and context in which it was presented.
Touche. Yeah, I'm trying.
A gross overstatement to add levity to the moment. Yes,
aggregators are going to have fun with that. Keller calls. Yeah.
I'm trying to hold back. I'm trying to hold back laughter like Sean Spears is trying to hold back telling a going on funny fart joke.
Yes, yes.
I thought the wrestling match was good, but good God, Khan needs to do a better. He needs to delegate or something, because his booking of the women's division is not good. I mean, you got a great champion in Toni Storm, and what? Like, Jade Cargill wasn't on the show tonight. I mean, she had her belt stolen. Why is she not chasing after Nyla Rose? Her from behind a second. Khan needs to...
That'll be on Rampage, I assume.
Yeah.
Rampage.
And it'll be a big development, and it will be alluded to next Wednesday, but there will be no video package to catch up the 57% of people who didn't see it, so they won't know what's happening when they watch Dynamite.
Well, to steal a popular phrase, Rampage is the drizzling shits. I tape it all the time, but I never watch it because the cards always suck. And it's like Khan's like given up on that completely. But he needs to like have hands off of the women's division, but and Rain book it, or I don't know. Really, heck, a rock grass, just anything would be better at this point. But
all right, Brian, the show's running along, so I got to ask you to make your final point. We got to respect the clock here.
Yeah, no problem. The show was over pretty good. I'm just glad they're page something to do. You know, that's not the greatest thing in the world. But MJF, I really like. He's kind of conflicted about everything and doing a good job of it, and not. So I like that. So thanks for taking my call and have a good night, guys.
Hey, Brian, I got an email. I was looking at the inbox here. It's somebody, I won't name who because I don't want to fight to start. But this emailer called you the grumpy cat of callers who uses outrageously angry verbiage. Finally, someone calls you out.
What's it, Deke?
No, it wasn't. I'm not going to say who it was. It's a regular emailer. But yeah, that was.
I bet it was Zach. I bet it was Zach in Texas, because if anybody's a major Tony Khan mark, it's him. Sometimes I wonder if he's Tony Khan. But anyway, thanks. Appreciate that. Have a good night,
guys. Brian, we love you being the grumpy cat. And I won't call you a kid. All right. Take care. And Brian's definitely not a kid, Eric, because he said he tapes Rampage. You know, there's a certain breaking point age-wise where you don't say tape. You say, you know, record, DVR, whatever. If you say you tape something, you know, you've got to be how old at least? 40?
Yeah, maybe even 50.
Yeah. All right. Grant in Detroit's up next. I'm going to sneak you in quick before we go to Javier to wrap up. But I want to get you in here. Grant, one or two thoughts on Dynamite. Thanks for calling.
I only have something quick. So, You know, normally I try not to criticize, but I just don't understand how you got Wardlow with the TNT title and FTR with all these belts, and neither one of them can get a proper feud. Like, just I don't get it. Like, those were two of the hottest acts in the whole company. And it's like Tony just quit booking him. Like, I'm lost on that one. What y'all think?
I mean, Eric, there's a lot to like about watching Dynamite, or a lot to enjoy. But if you've got certain favorite wrestlers or a certain philosophy about champions or a certain philosophy about teams that are over and have momentum and the booking seeming to, like, recognize that and book around it, there are some real flaws in one-time Booker of the Year Tony Khan's approach right now.
Yeah, it's one of the, you know, hallmarks of AEW booking 3 years in is that unless you are at the tippy top of the card and you're a seven-figure guy, you have your program and then you're forgotten about for 3 weeks or longer. Ricky Starks, where's he? He beat Powerhouse Hobbs, and where is the guy? they were, Tony Khan was so flummoxed to have something for FTR and Wardlow to do at All Out, he just decided to smush them together in a six-man tag, but he knew he didn't want Satnam Singh to wrestle, so he brought in the Motor City Machine Guns instead of having, you know, contracted talent wrestle in that spot. I get that it's frustrating. It's one of the pitfalls of having a big roster and maybe short attention span.
Yeah. All right, Grant, anything else you want to follow up on there?
No, that's all I have for tonight. I know you pressed the time. Just, you know, yeah, have a good one.
Thanks, Grant. Appreciate it. All right, it is time. Ah, just a deep breath when the jingle plays. Javier Machado from Miami area, joining us, PW Torch VIP contributor, pwtorch.com, pay-per-view previewer. Welcome. Good to talk to you. It's been too infrequent lately. Welcome.
Hey, yeah, I had to take a small break after the drubbing that you and Darren gave me last time, so I had to recover. I did listen to Darren's podcast because I caught up on Impact, so I did listen to it.
Oh, good.
Hey, Eric, how's it going?
Hey, Javier.
He won't tell you.
I want to.
I had my Omicron booster, and I'm, like, super cranky because I've got a fever and chills.
Oh, Matt, I didn't know that.
Well, when you asked me, I didn't have it yet. And then all of a sudden,
oh no,
it kicked in, like, at 5 o'clock. So I'm a little crankier than normal. That plus I listened to the first hour of the flagship yesterday.
I knew that was coming. All right.
Sorry,
I can't wait. I can't wait to listen
you
to
can't
that.
Can't wait what?
Listen to that, I can't wait to listen to the flagship tomorrow morning when I'm on my way to work, so... I had two major ones I wanted to hit, and I, as much as I liked the content of Hangman Page's promo, and hyperbole incoming, I think the director needs to be shot. I don't think you could undercut what he was saying, because here you have a wrestler who had a not great stellar run. Involved in the whole CM Punk thing where CM Punk basically, you know, said he was crappy champion, both in that promo that he did in the ring and, you know, the post thing. The first encounter he had with Moxley, he kind of, you know, sort of left with, you know, tail between his leg, and here's a chance to, you know, shoot back. And the content of the promo was really good for that because he set out who he was. He reminded the audience what he's done, in AEW, but while he's doing this, they're constantly cutting to MJF doing other things, completely undercutting, I think, the entire build for the match, because you are signposting to the audience that doesn't matter what Hangman Page is saying, because
yep.
MJF is the important one here.
Yep.
So the match that you're going to have on Tuesday is not important, because ultimately, even if by some sort of miracle Hangman Page wins, it's all about MJF. So, you know, and MJF, and I don't think Hangman Page is even going to do that. So if it's purposefully done, I mean, it's almost like it feels like it could be even purposely done in order to use equity that he has built up with the audience to sort of kind of get over Moxley a little bit more for the eventual face-off between Moxley and MJF, you know, and in which case like it's his punishment for his part of it. I could see that, but you know, you're also like you're signposting it enough where I have less interest right now in watching the match between Moxley and Hangman Page on Tuesday than I had previously to tonight.
Well, and it's why when I threw to Eric at the beginning of the show, you know, 2+ hours ago, for his analysis of what Hangman and Mox did, I started chanting MJF. Because even if you're analyzing what Mox and Hangman put time into thinking about and then executed in the ring, it still ended up being about MJF with the crowd chanting his name and the camera shots to him. So it should, whatever, if that happened on TV, that should also be what's going on with Eric's astute analysis of Hangman and Mox, is I should be distracting from it with an MJF chant. It's not, I mean, I think you can do it more, Javier, do you agree you can do it more subtly and have it have the same effect without undercutting or even overshadowing Mox and Hangman? Because frankly, if I'm Moxie, I'm kind of, I don't know if I'm pissed off, because maybe he knows in the end it really is this Hangman match is just a transition, but I think if I'm Hangman, I'm feeling like I'm being diminished in what should be a major title rematch for him after being, you know, as an ex-champion.
Yeah, I think that's. I mean, even with my, if I'm Moxie, I'm also pissed at that. I mean, the first question you have to question the just having MJF out there, even if you weren't cutting to him, you know, because I mean, I was
yeah, they just had
know,
a like they just said, had a pre-tape with him.
Yeah. You know,
the segment
and,
before pre-tape,
yeah. Yeah, and putting him out there, like, I mean, you don't necessarily know that the audience's attention was going to be that drawn to MJF, because, like, it surprised me. I didn't think that, because you could – and the on-site correspondent kind of mentioned that all of a sudden, like, the entire focus of the fans in the arena was on MJF when he was there. So I actually wasn't really expecting it to draw, you know, the – him being, you know, such a gravitational force at that moment. But so, you know, I could understand you didn't predict that. But then the actual cutting to it for the TV audience, I think, you know, made it even worse. I mean, granted, I'm someone who hates it when they do that during matches, where you're cutting into reactions from the audience during matches. But, like, doing it during a promo is just, to me, I mean, and particularly yeah. One where it's not one of those where you're waiting for the, because I can understand, because sometimes you have the, you know, you're waiting for the ooh and the ah, you know, and you have that pause when you're waiting for, like, a reaction. I could understand that in a promo when you cut, but this wasn't that case. So, yeah, I thought it was totally undercutting and diminishing of Hangman Page, like you said. And what otherwise would have been a good promo to put him on the right track. Because, I mean, he really did nail – he was respectful to his opponent, who is another babyface. So you're not drawing heat upon yourself in that respect. You're setting up a babyface versus babyface matchup. And, yeah, okay, so, you know, so there's no – even if you're booing someone, there's no, like, vitriol. You know, you don't want somebody to – you know, you're it's going to be one of those both these guys kind of matches for what you're doing. And, you know, like I said, he reestablished and drew the line in the sand of who he was and recovered some of that momentum that he had. So, yeah, again, great in that respect, but completely undercut completely by the direction for the segment.
Yeah. Eric, anything you want to add to that?
The MJF cutaways reminded me of, I think it's how Fox Sports produces World Series games and NFL, tense NFL games. They like show, they pick the wife of the player or the father of the player or the mother or like some coach, and they do endless cutaways throughout the game, and it's just, it gets to be annoying after a while. This was that compressed into 10 minutes or whatever.
And then, and keeping on the direction, then there was a segment when Spears returned, and my first thought was like, oh crap, you have Spears returning now, and he was in a major situation with Wardlow. So are they is there going to be anything that we're going to see out of this? And we did get that, because Wardlow was apprehensive. You could see Wardlow apprehensive when he's in the ring. And they share something, and then they hug. All of this happening off in the corner of the screen, mostly off the screen because the camera's panning everywhere, every which way. So, you know, they apparently, like, were okay, and which, I mean, they didn't have to have a full-blown conversation, just a look, and then, like, okay, yeah, you're here for me, and then we hug. You could kind of, like, gloss that over. But the fact that, like, you know, the camera was like basically doing whatever the hell it wanted, as opposed to, you know, giving you what's the story in the ring. And I got to hand it to Wardlow and Spears, if that was their decision to, like, you know, so they can, you know, fix that little detail. But the fact that, you know, it wasn't caught because, you know, for whatever reason, You know, it, again,
because the segment was overbooked.
Either,
yeah.
Yeah. So it's either because it's a continuity issue or direction issue.
I wonder how many people in WWE appreciate AEW's existence because it's showing the world some things that WWE is greatly underappreciated for. You don't notice a good referee. Like, there's a lot of things WWE does in booking and directing that annoy people. But there's a lot of things they do that are the result of decades of knowledge and attention to detail and professionals with pride in their jobs improving year after year and passing along gained knowledge from real mistakes. Everyone's going to make mistakes. And no one, you know, sometimes, you know, you don't know if something's overbooked always on paper till you see it play out. But I just think there's a lot of room for, obviously, AEW to improve and grow. You just want to see that improvement and growth. It's natural for there to be mistakes in terms of production and overbooking, but you just hope that that kind of evaluation and that kind of internal communication is going on. Because, yeah, if I'm WWE, I'm like, hey, see, you know, you might not like the jiggly camera, but there's 18 other things we do really well that you don't notice, because the only way you notice them is if we do them wrong.
And then with the continuity issue, I'm not sure if that's the actual issue with this, but you just had Jamie Hayter teasing a face turn, she's aligned with heels, teasing a face turn. Swerve, we're going a different direction. You have MJF doing whatever he's doing, or like sort of teasing face turn. I mean, that, you know, same ballpark, slightly different, but same ballpark.
Yeah.
And then you just had Daniel Garcia do the exact same thing where, you know, they're, and this one was really, this was pretty annoying to me to like, I'm checked out of this feud now, because they've been dragging the storyline for quite a while. I've read on some, you know, most of the wrestling news, that there's some people have been saying that, you know, it's time to move this feud along because, you know, we keep going with, you know, the whole will he, won't he thing. We're ready to move on, and then we just go back to square one of him, you know, oh, no, I'm going to stay with the Jericho Appreciation Society. And instead of, like, something new, we're back to this. I have no interest in watching, at this point, Daniel Garcia versus Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson again. So
yep.
It's just I'm over it.
I was tempted to lead with that. You know, the Garcia thing, but I felt like, you know, Hangman and Mox going to Cincinnati next week needed to be the lead with MJF's involvement, and then here we are all this time later and haven't really gotten to it. I am working very hard. It's taking a lot of effort to see this through and be patient before I, you know, I'm heavily critical of it, but I don't like it on a personal level. I think Garcia was on the road to being a breakout babyface star. Garcia and Danielson together as a team, I wanted them to be tag team of the year in 2023, or at least have Garcia be, you know, this breakout star, maybe winning the ROH title ultimately from Jericho, and that could give him a boost. And we have this, it can't have been the plan all along. And I am not at all confident. I'll put it this way. I am confident this will be looked back on as a mistake. I think it's a setback for Garcia. I think it's a setback for Jericho Appreciation Society. I think it's a setback for AEW fans' faith and storylines playing out logically. So I don't know why I'm willing to be patient to see what they have in mind for this. But I can't imagine it being a double swerve, so I think Garcia is just going heel, and I don't like it. Eric, what was your reaction, and what are your thoughts now?
I thought going in that the possibility still existed that Garcia could turn heel on Danielson. I thought the more likely story they were building, maybe for Full Gear or Final Battle, if they have one of those shows, I thought they were building Ring of Honor and the Code of Honor, and Garcia was finally going to be the one to give him his comeuppance, right, and take
right.
the belt and unite the pure title with the ROH title.
Which is a great story to tell.
Yeah, and it didn't happen. I'm with Javier generally. We're back to the match that they set up coming out of this is Garcia and Danielson, and I've seen that, what, twice on TV already? I'm not sure I need a ton more of that, especially because you Danielson kind of has to win to get his revenge, although he's you know, very gracious about putting over other people almost to a fault. Yeah, so.
And also especially because fans want to like Danny Garcia because they like Danny Garcia. And this goes against, I mean, it's hard to get a babyface who fans really like. And you had this just really good natural flow to this storyline and his character's arc that they just blew up with what felt like an audible hotshot call. I don't know how they're going to make me feel less against this in the next week or two or three, but or whatever the payoff might be at Full Gear. But I'm real skeptical that this is going to be seen as anything but a real mistake, a real misstep.
Yeah, I feel like I said earlier tonight, let's see this MJF, is he going to turn face?
Yeah.
There's this thing with the firm. Let it play out. I feel like we have seen this other thing play out for several months now, all summer, and they ended up in a place that probably we didn't expect, and that doesn't make the most sense.
Yeah. Javier?
Yeah, I mean, to really bury that idea, what this reminded me of, I haven't felt like this since the NWO days where you had that one person that started like percolating to the top that the fan in the NWO that fans got really behind and he was going to join Team WCW. It looked like he was about to turn to WCW. Here's a swerve. No, he's staying with NWO. That's what it felt like. And
you have to be more specific.
WCW,
I think that was every week, the thing you just said.
Yeah, I was about to say that. I mean, they kept doing it and doing it and doing that, but this was like it brought me back to memories of that, where there is a wrestler that you're really into and you want to see him grow and go beyond, and we're just going to put him back, and then they usually end up worse off where they, you know, than where they would have been. And I think that
is there a possible explanation that Danny Garcia can give that doesn't just seem like it makes everything else leading up to it irrelevant, but like I don't think there's not a credible way for him to explain this given the stance he took week after week leading up to this week.
Not with him walking out with Jericho Appreciation Society. Now with him walking out with him. At the moment that it happened, the only thing I can think of is he's fed up with both of them, that he's not a child, because one of the downsides of the feud, while it's been interesting, one of the downsides is that it's been a little bit emasculating towards Daniel Garcia, where you basically have these two older wrestlers fighting for his affection, you know, like you know, mom and dad fighting over, you know, who the kid likes better. There was a little bit of that, you know, so which is why, you know, that was my issue when it was kept getting dragged on for so long. It's like, you know, excuse the phrase, but man up and make a decision, you know, so it's time, you know, and then, you know, so I thought that the only when he took, you know, because it looked like he screwed, you know, he went against Jericho at first and then it was a swerve and he hit Brian with it. I'm thinking like, okay, well, this is the moment he throws on the belt, walks out on both of them, saying, I'm my own man, screw both of you, screw, you know, and then, like, he goes, you know, chart his own course. I thought that would have been a good thing for him. But, you know, him walking out with Jericho Appreciation Society, we're back to the, you know, he's still going to be the same old, same old. So other things that could actually salvage this, which, I mean, but the players are not in the correct position, is if this makes him, like, the second, Jericho's second, and then Guevara gets jealous, leading to a feud between and a breakup in that direction. But no one, but you know, you just solidified Garcia the heel, and no one's going to like Guevara right now. So you know,
again,
you have that. So I mean, there are ways you could do it, but none of the pieces are in place for them to do it.
It's like just keep MJF heel. Don't do the work shoot stuff. Don't do swerve culture. Don't do this anti-AW. Just don't be a babyface in Long Island even. Roddy Piper was Roddy Piper for however many years in a row, and he didn't need to reinvent himself because he was so good. And my point there is when you got something that's working, keep it simple and go with it. And that's how I felt about Garcia. It was working. Keep it simple. Go with it. And ride it out. And there just feels like there's this weird impatience and like this irrational boredom that results after 2 weeks of something working that we just got to do something different. It's I mean, if if Garcia is being blackmailed by, like, you know, Menard and Parker, and it comes out that, like, he did this because of, I don't know, compromising photos or his, I don't, you know what it's like, I don't, I can't even imagine, like, what story they could tell that, but I don't know if the body language even suggested that, but if they find some sort of exit strategy for Garcia to get back on track, that's fine. And then you have the sort of the nonsense of the and we saw this so often with certain other bad bookers over the last couple decades, where it's like Garcia didn't need to interfere to help Jericho win because Jericho was about to use the belt to win. So why did Garcia risk Jericho losing the title so that he could then seconds later use the belt? That doesn't hold up to scrutiny either. It's low IQ booking.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean that annoyed. Last thing. Would you have preferred, instead of Servant of Glory, Strict Lee?
Oh, so much more. I actually like that.
Ugh, bad puns.
Well, I mean, if something was going to happen, so I think I kind of like the.
Oh, I for War though, I'd go with JoLo. You know, it's like JLo, but JoLo.
Yeah. Oh, you know what?
So there's no confusion. Strictly is bad, and JoLo is bad. I'm just making fun of all these like bad team names.
I was just thinking that if they could get their hands on Bobby Roode, they could be Strictly Glorious, something like that. Let me not give them any ideas. Yes, I think that mentioned the MJF. And do you have a question for Eric? Eric, do you think that AEW is going to come up with a digital media championship or something along those lines to counter New Japan's new TV title? Since they seem to be going one for one.
I hope not, but you know what you should do? You should send that question into the Fix mailbag and have Todd Martin take a crack at it.
Well, I'm not allowed to. Wade has banned me from writing to the Fix, so that's my brother's job.
I did not ban you. Did I?
Yes,
did I forget
did.
That I banned you? Oh, okay. Well, you're welcome to write into the Fix.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. If your suspension is over.
Okay. Because I mean that was I was holding on to that joke for about much longer than. Since the first time my brother and I were on the call at the same time, because you jokingly said that I'm not allowed to write in, so I took it seriously. So I've been waiting for that long for for this punchline. So to be allowed to. But
was it worth it?
I don't know. I mean, it's really up to you. It's for your benefit.
All right. Well, Javier, any closing words in the poor Eric has a fever from his booster shot. Good for you for getting that. I got mine 2 weeks ago and had it felt the same way for a couple of days, but
no, that's pretty much it. So, wish you both a good night.
Thanks, Javier. Always a pleasure.
All right, have a good
night. Cool. Okay. Yeah, you too. All right, we're not going to get to other callers who have called in since we started the Javier segment. We got to wrap up here, or my producer will. Be more upset. Sorry for the emailers we didn't get to. I was going to read an email about Danny Garcia. Actually, I'll close with this. JB said, AEW missed the boat on Danny Garcia. Similar to other storylines that have dragged on too long, Death Triangle versus Hoss Black, Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter, etc. They teased Garcia turning to the light side with Danielson and BCC way too long, only to proverbially pull the plug out from under us once again. Pull the rug out, sorry. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube and get that kind of investment again. Now, I agree with that. I think they've done damage, Eric, to Garcia that can't be undone without some brilliant storyline twist that I'm not expecting in the next 2 to 6 weeks.
I mean, I believe you were doing the old Dusty Baby Doll Tully, what's in the envelope?
Yes, totally. Yep.
Storyline is what you were suggesting from 1985 or whatever, you know, which I don't think ever got resolved, if I'm recalling that correctly. We never did.
No.
The envelope. And I feel like we've already got a blackmail storyline going with Luchasaurus and Christian Cage, who we didn't even really talk about that opening match at all. So that would feel redundant to me, but AEW has been known to repeat angles in from segment to segment sometimes.
Yeah. I'll read the rest of JB's email because there's three quick points, that, and I think he stated them well. Does giving the tag team of Samoa Joe and Wardlow the name War Joe automatically make it 10 times less cool? Also, I know that Wade was ecstatic to see the return of the Perfect 10, Ty Dillinger. I mean, Sean Spears in his home country of Canada. And thirdly, once again, I thought Orange Cassidy got a big pop, but I think it was a bit of a disappointment to make his first title win the AEW All-Atlantic title. It feels like giving the kid who tries really hard in Little League one of those cheap plastic trophies. Yeah, I mean, there's too many belts. And All-Atlantic title's the least prestigious. Would you have rather seen Orange Cassidy or get a run with the TNT title? First, he's not going to be AEW World Champion, with all due respect to Orange Cassidy, who delivers in big matches, and I'm a fan of his. But a TNT title run seems like that would have been a better thing for him.
You win the smaller belt before you win the bigger belt, right? So
fair enough. And this is a one-line email. I'll read Kyle from Tinley Park, Illinois. It says, here we have Daddy Ass, Daddy Niece, MJF calling himself Daddy, and then, of course, Daddy Magic. Way too much Daddy for me. What do you think? Thank you for your coverage of our great sport.
If you watch the New Japan pay-per-view, or not pay-per-view, show from Monday, there was a Who's Your Daddy match between ELP, ELP, and Shingo.
Elf.
There was a ton of Daddy, Who's Your Daddy in that one.
Yep. Yep. All right, Eric, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure most of the time having you on.
Yes. Apologies for being cranky, but I have explained my reasons.
You're always cranky. That's just you have a reason this time at least.
Yes. Yes. Excuse.
Very, very good. Sleep well, recover, and then you can, go out maskless and catch a cold instead of COVID next time you're out and about.
I mask up on the train. I think that's about the only place I'm around people these days.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. No, it's just like, you take the mask off and it's like, oh, it's cold season. And that's like, I'm going to get a cold, aren't I? Yeah. It's nice not having, it was nice during COVID not getting colds. That was like, besides not getting COVID, which I managed to not get, not getting colds too has been nice.
Me too, so far, knock on wood.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks to everybody. Our on-site correspondent, thanks Anthony. Thanks to our callers, our emailers, those we got to, those we didn't get to, our listeners, of course. And, check out the much-talked-about flagship, a lot on AEW in the first half, a lot on WWE in the second half with Jason Powell. And we've got some flashbacks, of course, coming up on the Red and Blue Logo shows. And I'll be by after SmackDown, covering a big episode of SmackDown on Friday. So join us for that, too. Take care, everybody.